Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here at WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Pro Wrestling Year in Review Series continues with a stop in August in my annual long-form, super-extended play edition with Andrew Thompson of Fightful. Andrew and I talk for about 2 hours. Yes, 2 hours about the month of August and all types of like side topics about the year in pro wrestling and so on. It's a good conversation. And yeah, there's a lot that happened in August, including we had Forbidden Door, of course, on the AEW side of the ledger. We had in WWE, we had two nights of SummerSlam, a ton of news, which included Brock Lesnar returning, Cody Rhodes defeating John Cena, who turned babyface about 2 days prior randomly, Seth Rollins making his surprise return, from his quote-unquote injury and winning the defeating CM Punk for the World Heavyweight title. We had the ESPN news announced first for heading at the deal was going to happen with WWE in April of 2026. Then it got moved up to September 2025 and all kinds of other stuff. We talked about the world of wrestling from all the other headlines in WWE, the Karrion Kross situation, that whole thing blew up. In August, we had, of course, the rest in AEW, Ring of Honor, NXT, TNA, AAA, CMLL, Japan, the whole world. This is a fun two-hour conversation. If you're into wrestling talk and into looking back at the year that was, so let's get right to it. Andrew Thompson of Fightful, yours truly, talking about the month of August 2025 in the Pro Wrestling Year in Review Series here on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Well, I always like to welcome back past guests, especially to this series, and I'm always excited to talk to my guest today, the one and only Andrew Thompson. And I can't say of Post Wrestling anymore, since because the last time we talked, we were with Post, and now your new house with Fightful. Congratulations, yeah. And welcome back, my man.
I appreciate the congratulations, man. Oh yeah, very thankful and grateful for my time at Post Wrestling, and very cool to be back at Fightful as well. I worked there from 2018 to 2019 before I went to Post, and yeah, a little full circle, if you will. So yeah, very grateful to be at the places that I've had the opportunities to work at and for the people I've had the opportunities to work for.
That's great stuff. And still doing the podcast, right?
The NWA podcast?
Yeah.
No, I'm not on the NWA podcast no more. Not for any like bad or negative reason or anything like that. It was just because like time and like constrictions and stuff like that. It was just I wanted to also like manage my time as well. I have some like free time to myself.
Free time. What's that like, right?
But like in between like not working and stuff. But yeah, the NWA podcast is doing very well. Shout out to my guys, Nate, Chris, and Ray. Doing very successful stuff over there at the and they're doing the Nefarious Media podcast too. That's like their own network podcast platform, and they're doing very, very well with that. So gotcha. Go check that out if you got some free time.
Gotcha. So just writing for now then.
Yeah, just writing for now, man. Writing, chilling, and just whenever I got some time to myself, just hanging out with my family. That's it. Pretty much.
Yeah, this wrestling stuff is like all encompassing. And then when you include like real life, yeah, it's a lot. There's no breaks. There really isn't.
You ain't never lied, y'all. I'm telling you. But pretty appreciate you having me back on the podcast, man. This is one of my it's become one of my favorite yearly pro wrestling traditions.
I love it. Yeah, yeah. Same here. We have a lot to get to. So if someone's joining us for the first time, welcome. I'm surprised you'd be jumping in with August, but hey, go for it. It's great. And I'll tell you. So every episode, I do 12 of these, and every episode is a different month, different guests. And Andrew's been on this for, I think we're doing this 4 years, maybe five. So, Andrew's been on, I think, since the start. And yeah, so we go through, and basically what I do is I skim through all the headlines that we had from the Observer for the month. I think it was over 500 for this month, which is pretty crazy. And yeah, and so I boil them down to probably, 200 or so as a list that we're looking at right now. And we go through some of the big chunks, and I'll go through a bunch of these in rapid fire, and then I'll kick it over to Andrew for thoughts, and we have a good discussion. So we'll kick it off. So there's a ton of WWE stuff. We'll get to that at the end. So we'll start out with AEW and Ring of Honor because they had Forbidden Door. And Forbidden Door featured Cope and Christian, teaming Adam Copeland and Christian Cage, of course, team for the very first time in 14 years, defeating Kip Sabian and the returning Luchasaurus at the show. We had, of course, this unsanctioned cage match main event, the final match in London for Tanahashi, I believe, and also Will Ospreay was involved in this, and that is his injury. We knew he was going to be taking some time off after this. We didn't know how long or what the situation was. He was going to have to get surgery, but this was his write-off, and, of course, the babyfaces won. And then after, you know, the camera's kind of looming, and then he's taken out. All of a sudden, you see I saw Claudio Castagnoli just kind of kneeling down the corner, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, uh-oh. And then he got taken out by the Death Riders, stretchered out, and that was how he's written off in storyline. The company announced a brand-new attendance record for the O2, which was set by Forbidden Door, 18,992, the biggest pro wrestling show in the building. Take that, WB. Walker Stewart appeared on the show. He was obviously New Japan and Stardom announcer. He made his AEW debut in this broadcast. Jamie Hayter returned. Brodita won the tag team titles. Wardlow made his return, albeit it would be a brief one after being gone for quite a long time. Joined the Don Callis family in this angle with Swerve Strickland after his loss to Okada. Jim Ross made his return on the show. Queen Amanat afterwards stuck in the UK. She lost her passport. And then Tony Khan announced a new rule for the Casino Gauntlet world title shots, which you have to call your shot a week in advance. But yeah, this was another big show. Of course, we had, you know, July's All In, then we had this, and kind of leading in some good pay-per-views. But this was an entertaining show, another afternoon show for us in the United States on
yes.
the East Coast, yes. which is great. We love that. But yeah, what do you remember about this? I mean, I when I think back this, I think of the again, the cage match, which is a lot of fun, very violent, and the Will Ospreay angle. But yeah, this is overall, these shows are pretty solid.
Yeah, for Forbidden Door, like I know it was like, I remember, I probably said like a year or so ago, maybe. Like I remember there was like some slight criticism, and I guess it was because because initially the Forbidden Door event was like the big NJPW versus AEW, or like, you know, the stardom of from both promotions, but like a lot of the big name talents have migrated over to All Elite Wrestling, and I know it kind of got a little bit conflated a little bit there for the people who's watching, but I think the event like normally churns out some pretty positive reviews from what it seems like, and for myself as well, the Cope and Christian team, like that's always going to be like that little piece of that nostalgia that always resonates well with me. I did enjoy their reunion for the time that it lasted, and I'm pretty sure they will pick back up on that whenever they both come back to AEW TV. The one thing that I remember from that lights out steel cage match that's like burned in my brain is when Tanahashi climbed up on the ladder.
Yeah,
he's about to die, and everybody's like, "Hold on, like let's slow down, let's bring you down here for a minute." Yeah, Jamie Hayter's come back. The one thing that kind of it kind of slipped my mind when I was going through your notes, Jaws, that you put together, like you put like this extensive comprehensive notes together, like the way I had kind of forgot about this or not kind of but did was Wardlow's return.
Yeah,
he was in and he was out, he was just gone, and then like, you know, the Don Callis family, like they you wonder what's so funny about the Don Callis family, like, and I'm curious about get your thoughts about it. Like at first when they was like the whole like adding a bunch of people thing. It was kind of like, but like now, when you look at the group, like that's they have like a core solid like star studded like group of talents in the mix, and it's working really really well. I don't know if that's just me that feels like that, but yeah. it feels like it's starting to click, and I think it has to do with, of course, the like ascension of Kyle Fletcher as well as like. Being like the pseudo like face of the group, but then also you got Kazuchika Okada, and then you got Konosuke Takeshita, and then you got Hechicero, who has this like blooming online popularity as well. I'm curious as far as your thoughts about like the Don Callis family and this ascension of this group.
Yeah, they're on a lot. You know, they're all so many people that's hard to keep them off the show. Yeah, I think it'll be good when I assume Takeshita is going to be done with them. After World's End, I assume he's going to beat Okada for the to win that. That's going to be a he's going to go on his own and then be this huge babyface star, which they really need, which I'm looking forward to. I think, yeah, they've done so well. I think it's time for them to. I think there's going to be a big feud with the Elite, with Omega and the Bucks. I think that could be good. And yeah, I think as long as I think my thing with any big faction is as long as it's not holding back interesting title matches from being made other places, you know. And I think sometimes, you know, if when Fletcher held the TNT title, that's one of the things that kind of prevented like a lot of great challengers because they don't have like a ton of like, you know, super strong baby faces right now. So when you have
Right.
that many heels in one group, they're not going to challenge for those titles. So yeah, I think if as long as they can kind of keep it fresh and have some kind of interesting matchups and things like that, I think, you know, I think it's good. People hate them and they have a reaction. People hate Dawn, and I think that's a good thing. It's with any angle, right? It's you want to make sure you end it when it's strongest and not wait till it's like NWO, like Wolfpack, NWO, you know, the LWO back when it was in WCW, you know, where it's just these splinter factions where it's not as interesting. So as long as they kind of hopefully learn from history and know when to start the descent at the right time. But we'll see. Tony Khan loves his factions. You know what I mean? He loves the Death Riders and Don Callis family, these big groups. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
I was very much looking forward to like what I thought was going to happen, the Kyle Fletcher versus Kenny Omega match. Like I thought we was going to get that at some point. I was like genuinely because then he beat the hell out of Omega and then like he went off TV for a little bit and then the match didn't happen. I was like genuinely looking forward to that and then
Yeah.
you know it didn't come to fruition.
Let's go through this first chunk of AEW Ring of Honor news. We got three of these here, so I'll read through these and kick it over to you for thoughts. Aleister Black struck back against the quote unquote false narrative, saying he loved being at AEW. I don't really think many people believe that. Dustin Rhodes got double knee replacement surgery, gonna be out for a long time. AEW revealed that Full Gear returning to beautiful Newark, New Jersey in November. Eddie Kingston resumed his training, of course, being out a long time after the knee injury. We had this whole Speedball Mike Bailey MVP thing with this, you know, the reported backstage friction and MVP didn't like him and all this. And they did a kind of a funny video afterward. You know, Mick Bailey was filming for his vlog and MVP walks up and they share some F-bombs and the Hurt Business or Hurt Syndicate was there and all that stuff. So that was a big thing in terms of how he gets along with people and all this. And
Hey,
yeah.
John, I wanted to ask you, like, somebody does you like in wrestling media, and you've been covering pro wrestling for a while. Like, what is your like, I guess your assessment or your take whenever you see situations like that where you see these things reported, and like to me, what it felt like was a little bit of like course correction to like not stoke the flames of those reports and like you know sort of lean into it but taking control of it
Yeah.
if that makes sense, like if you
Yeah.
get what I'm trying to say.
I like it. I mean, I like it acknowledging it. I think these things seem to come up a lot with MVP and the Hurt Syndicate this year in terms of not wanting to lose and backstage issues. You kind of wonder, is it coming from internal? Is it, you know, MVP has certainly not been shy to talk about Triple H. Is it something that WWE is just trying to seed in there to be like there's issues? I mean, who knows? But there's certainly, you know, I guess one of those things where if it's legit, then you hope that Tony Khan and leadership have learned from the CM Punk Elite stuff and is like, let's squash this immediately. You know what I mean? Because to have that fester, you saw what happened with that. So you don't, granted, these are not the level stars they were, but just you just kind of hope that any situations are that they learn from their past mistakes. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Oh, did you have any more items that you had
Yeah.
to?
Yeah. I got to
Okay.
go through this first thing. So the Gates of Agony signed new deals. Buddy Matthews undergoing ankle surgery, of course, that being from AEW Grand Slam, tough loss, essentially a loss 2025 for him. Swerve Strickland underwent knee surgery after Forbidden Door, something he had been dealing with since the NXT days, surprisingly enough. Jim Ross signed a new deal. Orange Cassidy, we learned, was set to return. Tony Khan revealed the idea behind the AEW Fairway to Hell trademark as a golf tournament, followed by an episode of Dynamite. Tony Khan said Jay White's going to be out for a long time. He'd been essentially a big loss to 2025 for him. Samoa Joe, Mina Shirakawa, and Luchasaurus all return. As I mentioned, Jim Ross signed that new deal. Hikaru Shida signed a contract extension, renewed visa. We still have not seen her on TV in like a long, long time. Kyle Fletcher signed a long-term deal at some point and learned that. That came from Fightful. Matt Menard signed a five-year extension. Hook returned. We also learned he was under a new full-time deal. Kota Ibushi signed a two-year extension. Ace Austin signed with the company. Danhausen's contract extended against his wishes, also a Fightful report. And Will Ospreay saying he received lovely support from people in WWE amid his injury issues. Thoughts about any of that?
Man, it's a lot of stuff. And you like, because this was on the back end of it. Like, what do you see like Hikaru Shida fitting back into the fold? She has been like, it hasn't like she hasn't been active. She's been wrestling in like Japan for like, did some stuff at like 01 and like 02 Academy. Like she OZ Academy. Like she's been like active consistently, well, somewhat towards the back end of 2025. But like, what do you see Hikaru Shida fitting in within this current landscape in the women's division and her, and less sort of her, I guess her value to this women's division?
Yeah.
And then you can even talk about like Britt Baker. Like Tony Khan has spoken about her in media appearances. He said he wants Britt back. I'm like, so bring her back.
Yeah, I know. He can do it anytime he wants, right? Yeah. I think it's weird. I don't know where she fits, you know? I think I honestly don't know where she fits right now. They've really been focusing on this like core group of women.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because like some of these early champions that they had, Rio, Shida, Nyla Rose, they're not really in the mix. Rio comes back like once a year for about a month and a half and then disappears, right? Either hurt or just gone. And Shida has been gone for a long time. And you don't hear like a lot of people kind of being like, we can't wait to see them again. You know, it's kind of like they're just forgotten. And Nyla Rose, I mean, just, I don't know what the deal is there. She's still around, but it's kind of interesting that this kind of this old guard with, and not even that long ago with AEW women champions, they're just kind of like not needed and not really seen as important, you know? And it's, so I find that interesting. And I mean, we're talking about like early in the series, like a women's continental classic. I think they could definitely pull one off, and I think Shida would be a good to great addition to that, you know.
Yeah,
but we'll
see that.
We'll see. They have to have kind of a plan for it. I don't know, you know, I don't know what the plan would be to bring her back, but she could come back at any time. She could come back at World's End, she got to have something to come back. It's going to be interesting to get people to be like, you know, the y'all must have forgot type thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Like I think it could be maybe beneficial to introduce maybe like a new, I guess, aspect of her character, maybe lean into like a bit more aggressive, like heelish role for Hikaru Shida to maybe like, I guess, spruce it up a little bit in terms of like just going off based off her, the merit that she has. I mean, that could always work, but I think what you said at first, the Continental Classic idea, if they were to run back, if they were to run a women's Continental Classic, I think that'd be like a perfect, you know, I get. I mean, well, of course, not waiting until December 2026, November. I mean, the November 2026 to reintroduce Hikaru Shida back on the TV. But sure. I mean, I think that could be a great way to sort of endear her back into the fans, is, you know, from what they originally you know, gravitated towards her for. So
yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking at this Aleister Black thing. Like I remember when he first left. I mean, when he first returned back to WWE and he started doing the media rounds, he had did this interview with like this like Substack outlet. I can't remember the name right now, and I'm gonna search it up because I hate when I forget people's work. But he had said some along the lines, like one of the big quotes that came out of that interview. And it was from like May, when he said that when he spoke about his WWE return, he said it felt like coming home. Nothing is like WWE. No locker room I've ever been in. And you know, of course, when you say things like that, and especially coming off the back end of you just leaving a company, it's always going to draw that type of that reaction on social media. He got a lot of pushback for those comments. And like I know it was like that whole ordeal about, I'm assuming it's just speculation, that he did not want to lose in AEW in singles competition and things of that nature.
Yep.
It's so fascinating when you hear these things and then you know, see how they circulate and also see how the wrestlers respond to them, and then you know, not really knowing like what's the actuality of those situations. It's pro wrestling.
It's pro wrestling. You got it. Let's talk about some more. So, Title Tuesday was announced to make a return. The first ever AEW September to Remember was coming for obviously September, a 3-hour special. Taz had to miss Dynamite and Forbidden Door due to not being able to travel due to his knee replacement surgery. Bryan Danielson was announced for a commentary role in AEW Dynamite that would soon become more of a permanent position. We got the full details for AEW returning to Australia for Grand Slam, heading to Sydney, Australia, but they're also returning to Brisbane for a House Rules event that same weekend. Is that coming in February? Tony Khan addressed the future of AEW video games, just really kind of no plan forward. He's interested in doing it, but he just has no real plan or a schedule to do that. The Young Bucks released the very first BTE video, being the Elite, since 2023, and they also teased the return of Jack Perry. Isla Dawn made her debut on Collision. AEW announced an earlier than expected return to the UK, December in Manchester and Cardiff, which actually happening this Saturday. It begins. The company's launched a new merchandise collaboration with three United Soccer League teams. And we had this Jake Hager interview, very jaded from his exit from AEW. He said, took shots at Tony Khan, says AEW changed when Cody Rhodes left. He took some shots at FTR, and the FTR had to go to social media to say that they refuted his claim that he said they refused to show up to a past AEW event. They said, no, that was not the case. And
That's the same woman he called Tony Khan a communist.
Yes. And he also said he's pretty much retired. No big surprise there. So Jake Hager, no big fan. Ricochet went to file a trademark for the term bald. And then also Nathan Cruz from the UK hired as a backstage coach and producer. Thoughts about any of that?
The Jake Hager interview was quite something.
Yeah.
I specifically remember that him calling Tony Khan the whole communist ordeal. Jake Hager's an interesting fella, very very interesting guy. But I did before we go back into the current stuff. I wanted to mention something from like the last section.
Yeah.
Like it was about the Hook and his time in AEW so far. Like I don't know what it is, man, but it's not clicking for me right now. Like I feel like with Hook, he came in and he had all this, like, you know what I'm saying? It felt like they had like something, and of course because it was new and it was fresh, and you know, but like now I don't know, man. Like I feel like I really can't explain, because I don't want to say it's the way that he speaks, or in terms of his like the voice inflections and his promos, but sometimes it kind of feels to me like he's playing Hook
Yeah.
instead of like being Hook. Like, you know, like I don't even know if that
So
makes sense.
when he first came in, he had what the kids call the aura, right?
There you
That's
go.
a term you
There
hear,
you
I see
go.
all the time
There you
now.
go.
He doesn't have it. I remember in 2023, Jesse Collins was on this very series and was talking. He's saying, I think this next year, I think it was 2024. He said, I think in 2024, Hook could be one of AEW's biggest stars and their world champion. And like, you think so? And this was after just, you know, a few matches, but he had that thing.
Yeah,
He came out and just
he did.
that aura. And you're
He
right,
had it.
he doesn't have it anymore. I think the injuries have helped, but also they didn't. They had this thing where he had this long winning streak. He had the FTW title, and they just kind of like just he gave it to Taz, which was
They took it off him, then they put it back on. They took
yeah.
it
It
off him
just
again.
and he gave it and he gave it to Taz, which is a cool moment. But it wasn't from there. That was kind of the point of like, all right, time to start boosting up. Like he never competes for singles titles, you know, like it's never like he should have been like TNT champion. That's another thing too, with long title range. And I've heard this now a lot on social, and I completely agree with it. Shorter title reign should be more common because you get more people involved. And the fact that you have all these good wrestlers, if you think about it in like, and if we're trying to suspend our belief, great wrestlers should be able to beat other great wrestlers at any point. It shouldn't be after a year. That's when they beat them, right? So it should be
Right.
like constant, not like every single week, but I don't know, 3-4 month reign, something like that. I mean, this is just kind of what it is, and you give different guys runs, or Honestly, I mean, I think I might have mentioned this before. He should be like Ring of Honor world champion, give these younger guys a chance to do that and be in the mix in a different group and learn how to do that and then kind of call them up. He's a perfect candidate for that. But yeah, you're right. There's something like that doesn't feel the same as it did a couple of years ago.
And I'm about to say, like, even him being surrounded with Samoa, and just to go piggyback off your point real quick, like, even with the putting the world championship back on Joe, I was like, cool. Like, because I've never been of the mindset in regards to pro wrestling that every title reign needs to be this, like, long lasting, like, this excursion of a title reign that we got to go through this journey. Like, you can get things in and make it feel special and pocket it right there, and then you can circle back to it, because it's plenty. Now you have people still clamoring a bit for a Hangman to get his world championship back because they didn't feel like they got the full gist of it. And you got the credible heel champion of Samoa Joe, which you said I think when you look at it right, that they needed a Samoa Joe, like a heel credible guy to take the world title and just let things sort out with the baby faces and things like that. But like going back to Hook, like I had when the look at this, it came to my mind when he had that I think it was the AEW World title match against Samoa Joe, like
Yeah,
back in
the short one was like
the
6 or 7 minutes. It was
dude,
awesome.
it looked great. He looked great. You know what I'm saying? And I think Joe was able to, like, cause I remember that there was like some like somewhat shaky on mic moments for Hook. But like Joe kind of like they kind of got it together, and of course the match turned out to be what it was, and it was like 7 8 minutes. But yeah, man, like I don't know what it is. It's like even though he's surrounded by Hobbs and he's surrounded by Shibata and he's surrounded by Joe, it's like it's not clicking. So
He should be in next year's Continental Classic.
there you go, there
All
you
right, let's
go.
go through this last chunk. Speaking of Hook, his dad honored after Dynamite at the 2300 Arena. He was entered in the Hardcore Hall of Fame during that Philadelphia run that they had there. Tony Khan said, "I would love to have Chris Jericho back in AEW or Ring of Honor." This is a big month for Chris Jericho rumors,
Yeah,
that's for
man.
sure. A new hologram rival was teased on Collision. Darby Allin building a free skate park in Georgia. Company revealed their location for Final Battle in an episode of December. A Collision in December just happened this past weekend in Columbus, Ohio. Lee Moriarty set to hold a solo art exhibition in Los Angeles. Sky Too Hotty and his son Keegan Garland competed as a tag team at a Ring of Honor taping. Tony Khan finally opened up about this whole Deonna Purrazzo Mexico situation. He did that in a call. Philadelphia Union picketed the 2300 arena shows. WWE and AEW continue to get sizable tax credits to hold shows in Ohio. Two companies combining, Pac and Sami Zayn attending a Newcastle versus Liverpool soccer game together, or sorry, football for those over that use that term. And then finally, we had Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor. We had Bandido and Athena title defenses. Shane Taylor Promotions winning the six-man title. Sammy Guevara turned heel, joined LFI. Tony Khan finally revealed the brackets for the Women's Pure Championship tournament. And the show aired for free on YouTube due to a bunch of technical issues as well. Thoughts about any of that?
That's a it's a loaded section we got here, man. I think the obvious one is the Jericho stuff. Like, so Josh, when you think he's showing back up in WWE?
Royal Rumble.
Royal Rumble in
Yep.
Saudi?
Of course. Of
Oh
course.
man.
They would love that. They love their
Oh
Attitude Era guys, right? And
yeah.
their Ruthless Aggression Era, whatever. Yeah, when he wasn't at All In, I'm like, it's done.
Yeah.
It's over. If you don't have, he's not their biggest show of the year because he'd figure out some way to do something. That's when I knew. I'm like, it's done. It's done.
What did you make of the comments from the Talk Is Jericho podcast with the Dudleys when I guess it was he I didn't li I only saw the transcript of it, but he said something along the lines of like Impact's Bound for Glory made them look like the second biggest.
Oh yes.
What did you make of that
I
when you
think
first heard that?
he's I think he's he is he's incredibly smart, and I think he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I think it's part of the ramp, right? And I think that he knows he's going his free agency that if he doesn't know already, I mean, I honestly I would not be at all surprised if the Royal Rumble thing doesn't happen. I would not be surprised at all to see him do to be a bigger part of the TNA thing. Yeah, so he could appear there as well. I would, I don't know if they do a dual contract because I don't think WWE do that. I think obviously he'd want to go WWE first, but if that wasn't an option for some reason, which I can't imagine, they would love to bring him back, I'm sure, in some form or fashion. The TNA thing makes a lot of sense, and again, it's basically WWE Lite anyway, right? So,
Yeah. That's like I'm thinking about that, right? And I'm like
he's never done it
that
before, and
I know.
that's his big thing
Hey.
is like he wants to do all these things, you know. And I think that's a perfect thing to be like, here's one more thing to check off the career box.
Hey, Josh, do you remember back in like this was when Don Callis and Scott D'Amore were co-executive vice presidents at Impact. Do you remember those rumors like around the time when they were trying to get They were talking about getting Chris Jericho and bringing him to Impact. Like it was like around the time when he had like, I think it was like sometime around the time when he he was either already setting up for the he already had made the Power Struggle appearance to attack Kenny Omega to set up the
Okay.
Dome match. Like it was like around that time, or it was like sometime after. But I remember it was these rumors that he. Like the Impact was trying to get him, and I know Scott D'Amore and Don Callis had like sort of danced around it in like media appearances and stuff like that around that specific time. But
Yep.
when I'm thinking about the idea of Jerry, it essentially be what he was for AEW at the beginning, like the AMC, like for A, I mean for the TNA, they own AMC, and like sorry Mike Santana, like sorry buddy, like I mean you know how that's probably gonna go down.
Well, they had someone, remember they had someone attack Nick Nemeth when he tried to cash in at when Santana won the title Bound for Glory. He was taken out in the back. And they haven't
By
really paid.
Elijah.
Oh, it was revealed to be okay. Got it, got it, got it. You know what I'm saying? Say if they hadn't revealed.
You talking about
Yeah, sorry, no, Elijah came out, but then one of the time, well, sorry, when Frankie Kazarian
that was
cashed in.
Stacks. That was Stacks. Chad
Oh, it
Stacks to
was.
Rizzo.
Okay, got it. Got it. I was gonna say if they hadn't revealed that, there's your Jericho right there, but maybe not. Maybe not.
But yeah, Jericho, like I think it's pretty much a lock. Like he's going back to WWE. Like so I'm assuming this is gonna be his retirement run. And like I like how can you just off the top of your head, I guess, see this turning out for Chris? Like I'm assuming it's gonna be like a year thing, I'm guessing, like maybe 2 years.
I'm gonna guess all deals now seem to be like three,
Three. Okay.
but I think it's every part-time deal now. This is kind of one of the this is a it's a benefit and it's also a problem, is all these guys doing part-time deals that hold so many younger people back, you know, or more established people that are doing the grunt work week in and week out when a Reigns or a Jericho or any of these essentially, part-timers can just drop in for a couple months and then leave.
We got to wait 10 years to see Javon Evans in the main event, man.
Exactly, right? Yeah, yeah. 15 years, according to Mark
15,
Henry. Just like, oh my God, what? I mean, I like Mark Henry. He's been on this show, but yeah, I think he's going to do. I think he's smart enough to know he's not going to be a weekly character because I think people get a little bit fatigued. But yeah, it happens every time they bring someone back, right? There's a big spike at the beginning. Tony Khan fumbled the ball, all this stuff, and that people will love him. And then in your month 2 to 3, that's kind of when you start to see, okay, where things are going to be. If he's a weekly character, it's not going to feel as special. But yeah, I think he'll have some. I think he'll do something with Punk. I think he'll do some interesting things. But yeah, I think yeah, it'll be very fast, and I think it'll culminate with him being in the Hall of Fame. I think that's
Yeah,
the.
for sure.
Yeah, that's the end goal, and then that'll be it.
Hey, so for the you had noted the ROH Women's Pure Championship tournament, obviously Deonna Purrazzo, the new champion. And do you think, because she was supposed to face Queen Amanada in that semifinal match to go to the final. So do you think that had Queen Amanada not had that serious, injury that she's dealing with right now, do you think that that would have been the route, or you think they would have always gone with Deonna?
I could go a coin flip either way on that. I think if again, Amina is a perfect example. She should be. You don't need Athena to be a champion for 1,000 days. Amina would have a good run. Like you need like shorter runs to get people more like experience with belts and things like that. But yeah, I could see either way on that. But my assumption is that what's the Is Supercard of Honor, is that the next one during Mania
Yeah.
weekend?
Yeah.
Whatever the next big one is, I can see them because you know what happens? Like they cool things off for a while. They just kind of do these shows which don't really mean anything. And then like 3 weeks before, they start kind of building the
Yeah.
card. I could see them doing an Amanada Perrazzo title match based on something that happened, in December. So
Yeah.
it's really fresh in everyone's minds, you know?
Yeah, she had confronted her after she won the pure title, so it seemed like, that's probably the likely direction they're gonna hold. And like you talking about Athena, like, dude, it's so like, first of all, I'm a big fan of Athena. Like, I think that she really doesn't get like, especially with the reigning, but I also think it's the branding of it as well. But like, I think that she's definitely in that conversation when you talk about some of the best female performers. Wrestlers, I guess in general, that in 2025 that have had, like these past 3 years that she's had the title, I think like 33, 34 different title defenses. And I try to do this thing where I try to like keep like a tab of like some of my favorite matches throughout the years. And Athena's been on a couple different lists multiple times over the last several years. And 3 years as a champion, and like it had kind of like I remember at I kind of thought that, it was like, oh yeah, man, Billy Starks is going to be like it's obviously going to be Billy. And then I remember when we got the final battle 2024. I remember when that happened, I was like, I don't know. Like, and that now I feel like her title reign has become this thing that's kind of bigger than like somebody. It's like this huge thing. You're trying to figure out who's the right person that'll like make it feel like a natural progression and transition into the individual who's going to carry that on. And like you mentioned, Queen Amanada, I can see that. I mean, I still think Billy Starks could be in play, but I don't really know. But I mean, like at this point, you might as well just have Athena just relinquish the damn title at
I'd
this
agree.
point.
I'd agree. Let's get to some NXTNA, as I'm calling it. It's been a change since last year because
Ah, wordplay.
these
Look at
three
that.
companies are so intertwined now. It's hard to tell who is where and all this stuff. So I just put them all in one section. So we'll start with this. We had Lola Vice and Lince Dorado getting a AAA mixed tag team title shot announced for September. Speed disappeared. Yes, Speed on Twitter. X disappeared. People didn't know what was going on, but in this month, I believe it was at Heatwave, it was revealed that the title is going to be revived for NXT, and they announced the upcoming Speed Women's Championship tournament. We had Triple Mania 33, and we had a four-way title match for the Mega Championship. Corey Graves, JBL, and Conan were on announce duty. Triple H spoke to the Triple H, Triple A, Triple H, Triple A, Triple H spoke to the Triple A roster. My head just exploded. To Ross before Undertaker, a big part of now the creative there. Almost made his debut. Did not see that coming. In their version of the Royal Rumble, the Copa Bardal that they call it, El Hijo del Wagner Jr. won AAA's Latin American title and beat El Macias. And then Pagano and Psycho Clown won the tag team titles from Angel and Berto in a street fight.
Hey, Josh, did you remember when when El Macias showed up in TNA and cost like Steve Macklin the match? Or like he showed up in TNA and they had that face off, and then he came to the ring and like he got like the distracted Macklin, and then I don't think anything happened after that.
I don't remember
D
that.
-d -d
That was
-d
that
-d
this year?
yes, dog. Hold on, wait. Let me look this up real quick. Hold on,
Okay.
because I remember this. I was like he just stopped appearing for TNA.
It's a very TNA thing.
This was at he showed up at Victory Road, and he called Steve Macklin the TNA International Championship to Frank Kazarian. Like he just like they had a back it was on the countdown to Victory Road, and Steve Macklin was doing a backstage interview with Gia Miller. El Macias showed up. They had like a face off, and that was it. And then, like, the natural thing that I'm thinking is with Impact, they do the television tapings the day after their special. So I'm thinking, like, oh, that's a setup to El Macias showed up during the match. He called Steve Macklin the belt. And that was it. So he got this. When you mentioned
Interesting.
his name, that had reminded me. I didn't mean to cut you off, bro, but
All
that
good.
was funny.
All good. You remember AJ Styles made a surprise appearance during the main event, pulling Dom out of the ring, Dominic Mysterio, as he was about to pin, I believe he was about to pin Vikingo. Company really or WWE released new Finn Balor merchandise after a Memorable trip me a moment. I don't know what this is, but I assume it was the puppets with him and Iguana. Conan inducted in the Hall of Fame that night by Rey Mysterio, and they started giving Alberto El Patron chants and Rey Mysterio. And it's been translated like three different ways, but essentially he's like, I'll get him here or something along those lines. I don't know if that's happening anytime soon. El Grande Americano, his next match was announced also for September. The company reported record numbers for Triple Mania 33 in terms of YouTube views. And they also announced a date and location for the next Worlds Collide event, which would be September in Vegas during Canelo Alvarez fight weekend. We also had TNA Emergence. Not a ton of news here. Li Jingli signed with the company after being released from WWE. Sami Callihan, rather, retired on this show. Trick Williams defeated Moose to defend the TNA title. We started to get some rumors about Lorenzo Fertitta, former owner of the UFC, possibly buying TNA. We also learned that WWE has the right of first refusal to buy TNA if they get offered a deal from somebody else. The contracts of Tom Hannifan and Matthew Raywald were extended. Casey Navarro had surgery for a torn ACL. The TV rights stuff really started to kind of come into play here. TNA was reportedly targeting $10 million a year for their rights. The CW and A&E were interested. And there was a talk about possibly them going to a WWE affiliated network to go head to head with Dynamite. WWE announced three NXT live shows for September going back on the road. Chelsea Green and Moose made surprise appearances. There was a build to No Mercy. We had Heat Wave, Ash by Elegance winning the Knockouts title at NXT Heat Wave, which is a sentence is so strange to say. And then Dark State won the NXT tag team titles. Adrian Rizzo was out of action with a torn ACL meniscus. WWE playing another AAA event for the US. And Triple H called Undertaker one of the big driving forces behind AAA. Thoughts about any and all of that?
Man, that's a
It's a lot.
it's a lot of good stuff in here. First of all, the Undertaker being a booker for AAA is
Crazy, right?
that's a sin right there, brother. I'm telling you, that's something. But like, okay, so there's a couple of things I want to touch on in this section. So, like, the first thing is I actually want to get your thoughts about this. Like, dude, I swear I feel terrible for Chad Gable. Like, can you like he's doing this El Grande thing, and it's fine. Like, it seems like it's going well for him. He gets hurt, and then here comes Ludwig Kaiser, and then he just smokes this thing, and he speaks fluent Spanish,
It's incredible, right? Yeah.
and the crowd loves him, and they singing his theme music. I'm like, I remember when I was like, damn, Gable, and like I remember that time, like around that period when he was like. It seemed like he was primed to dethrone Gunther to become Intercontinental Champion, and that never worked out. And then I'm assuming they ended up inserting Sami Zayn, and then Sami Zayn had the moment at WrestleMania 40. But like, I was like, God damn, Gable, like that's rough, bro. Like you doing this thing, and again, he was I thought he was fine as the El Grande persona, but like with Ludwig Kaiser doing like that's. Like
Yeah.
when you bring him back, it's like you might as well not even introduce. And then now they introduce the what was it, the Rudo and the other
Yeah, Pete Dunne and
PP
Tyler
Dunn
Bate
and
on
Tyler
it.
Bate.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, they Dunn and Bate, man. Good Lord,
Yeah.
they got reduced to the El Grande guys. But I mean, it's like the El Grande compared to like I guess Gable's thing. Like you, I kind of feel bad for Gable on that one. And Dom, like I do want to talk about like Dominic Mysterio's. Like ascension and like this role that he's like sort of carved out for himself. I ain't gonna lie, Josh. It kind of been like a impressive a little bit to like, cause I when he first showed up at like what was that SummerSlam 2021? I remember vividly thinking I was like, yeah, this shit probably gonna last like a year.
Yeah, it did. It
Like,
didn't. Yeah.
you know what I'm saying? I was like,
No
this
aura. No
all
aura.
right.
No aura.
And Josh, do you remember when there was like the comparisons between Dominic and Hook about who was gonna
Oh my
like
God.
who
Yes.
like
Yep.
it was like these constant comparisons between these two about who was gonna be this in X amount of years and X, Y, and Z 1, 2, 3. And I remember I was looking at Dominic, I was like, yeah, brother, this is probably gonna be like a good little 1 year experiment. You know what I'm saying? They'll probably throw him down in the NXT, let him ride out his contract and stuff like that. But I ain't gonna lie, I've been like genuinely impressed. At the like, it seemingly confidence, like Dominic, like he doesn't seem like he's like in any scenario with any wrestler that he may be in the ring with, like he doesn't seem startled in terms of being on the microphone and holding his own. Like the in-ring work, that's what it is. But like I think more so, especially in WWE, what's going to carry you over the top is, I guess, the persona of it all, and the aura, as the kids say. You got to have that more than anything. And I ain't gonna lie, man. Like I've been very impressed by Dominic. It's more so because of his ascension and what I thought he was going to turn out to be, and then what he has turned himself into. I was like, you got to give people their props when they finally get theirs. And you talking about the TNA emergence thing, dude. Laying Lee, she had. I don't know if you had a chance to hear it, Josh, but she did an interview last week on Busted Open. It was after she won the Knockouts title at the Gold Rush show. Bro, that was like I highly encourage people to go listen to that interview. It was like early on in the interview when she got like real like emotional when she was talking about winning the Knockouts title and like relocating to America. And it was like a whole it was like a 5 minute, 6 minute thing that she did, and they just let her speak. And like a part of me, I was like, dude, like TNA, like if I was them, I would like literally just like clip that and put that on television and like just let people watch that. Cause like
And they
I'm
did.
but they just, you know what I'm saying? And it, like, dude, and it was like it cause it felt genuine in what she was saying. And like, you know what I'm saying? Like she was talking about like not having her family, and like she was like, all the time things she was thinking about quitting and like struggling with English. And like I was like, that was like a nice little moment right there that she had, looking at this other stuff. NXT Heat Wave. The only reason I bring that up is because I remember Javon and Oba headline that show for the NXT Championship. And I wanted to actually ask you this, Josh. What do you do Saturday night's main event, Cody, Oba? What are you doing, Josh? What are you doing?
I think what's going to happen is Cody's going to win,
Oh man.
but he's going to put Oba over strong, and they're going to have a handshake at the end, and commentary is going to really put over like, he's next up. Like one of those things where, good effort type of thing. I think Saul Ruco beat Bailey.
Really?
Yep, I do. Leon, who are Leon and Javon taking on again?
AJ and Dragon Lee for
Oh, that's
the
right, for
tag
the title.
titles.
I think AJ and Dragon Lee won that. And I think you could, I mean, I don't think they'll go to a draw with Cody and Oba. That would be kind of cool if they did. But I think Cody will win because I think that's one of those things that Oba will have his time, but I think Cody's going to put over so strong that that's going to be the
Yeah,
that, that's going to
I
be
see that.
kind of the talk. Yeah, I'm really interested to see how long the Cena thing goes, because like trying to time things out, I don't think it's going to be like a super long match. And I have this feeling that Cena's not going to want to do like a big retirement ceremony at the end, but he's got to do something, I assume the locker room will come out. He'll just do a thing. I just have this feeling he's not going to want to do something big. But go back to the original question. I think Cody wins, but I think he puts Oba strong enough where it's clear to the fans that he's a guy to pay attention to, and he is.
We'll see him in 15 years.
That's right. 15 years. Yeah, the 15-year title. Yeah.
But like the only thing about that, I was like, dude, if there was ever a time if you wanted to just make a guy, like
Yeah,
what
totally.
better, like and think about they did it with Kevin Owens when he first came on the main roster. He got the win over Cena, and it locked him in just like that. And I mean, Cena got his win back over Owens, but like, they started KO off strong, man. And like I mean, you can always Oba's he's not on the main roster, but like I'm my guess is that post WrestleMania, Oba's probably gonna be on the main roster. I'm assuming he's going to they're gonna wait till Mania, NXT takeover, then NXT whatever stand and deliver the crown Javon Evans, and then they'll shift over to the main roster. But I'm like, if there was ever a time if you ever
I
wanted to
agree.
just show somebody like, okay, who do you guys need to be have your eyes locked in on from NXT? How about the guy who just beat the top guy in our company, who was billed as the top guy in our company? I'm just like, man, like, but I
I think if he wasn't champion, they might. I think Cody would probably want to do that. I think WWE doesn't want to have their champion look weak. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Even
I
though
feel
we
that.
all
I feel
kind of know
that.
what's up. But yeah, I think that's how it's gonna go. But I think Obi's gonna look pretty strong if I'm
To your point about the Cena thing, I think they're gonna you think they're gonna add another match, or you think it's gonna be a full
No.
match?
No,
Oh my God.
four match card, and yeah, because unless I they could go long in Peacock if they wanted to, but I'm going to guess they're really in these kind of shorter shows. And yeah, I could see it going a little bit over, but yeah, I don't think they're not going to shortchange Cena, because that's
Cena,
what people there are paying, especially there's people watching and there's people that are paying a shit ton of money there. You know, they don't want to give him like a 5 minute match or something like that, but I also don't think it's going to go like 32 minutes or anything like that. But also they don't have to do commercials, right? So yeah,
No.
my hope is that I don't know. I've seen the Sting post-match thing. I've seen the Goldberg post-match thing. People like those moments of just to say goodbye. I don't think Cena's going to want to do that, but I think he's going to get a standing ovation. I think everyone's going to come out on stage. He may say simply, you know, he keeps simple like thank you or something like that, or he'll have some sort of rehearsed line, but it's not going to be a long speech. And he'll take it in the crowd and for a couple of minutes, and then that'll be it.
I can see him doing making an appearance on the because I know they don't like the post show. I can see them just like giving the mic to him and just letting them, I guess, give
Possible.
one last thing off.
My big question is, The Rock going to be there? He should be. He should be. Just not to do an angle, but to do some sort of thing. He should be. He's on the TKO board. This is one of the biggest stars. Someone he had a rival at Mania. I'd be super surprised if he is not there.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him being there. It's like, when you mentioned his name, the first thing I was thinking about was like his McAfee interview when he explained why he
Oh my God.
stopped appearing
And then
after.
Cena's response on the Chris Van Fillet show, just like nobody cares about it. Like, yes, they do. Yes, people care about the fact that Rock and that wasn't followed up on.
Yes, and then didn't he say that it was like it was basically just like done for like a viral moment like that was like the I guess something along the lines that he said during that interview where he was like the heel turn was a viral moment and that's how he described it and things like that. But like that follow up was like, and when he went on the Pat McAfee show and like I guess broke it down from his perspective about why he did, he was like, you know, I just felt like, you know, it was better off if Cena just took it from there. And I'm like,
Right. No, it's not.
you were like the impetus of this.
Right.
Like, how can you just disappear? And then they had the old Travis Scott thing, and then
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you heard about Logan Paul's
Yes.
I
Yes.
guess
Yes.
his explanation for why the Travis Scott thing
He just
didn't.
never showed
Yeah,
up.
he just never
Yeah.
showed up.
Yeah. I
So
the
I mean,
whole nobody like nobody believes The Rock when he's saying that, because he was the whole catalyst for the whole thing. So for
exactly.
such a big wrestling fan, there's 0% chance he would ever say, "Oh, that's fine." It's just he just there was something there he just didn't want to do it, or something happened, or like you didn't need, they also didn't need Travis Scott for the rest of it. You could have just done him and people would have been like, cool,
Thank
but
you.
there was no finish of it. I don't know. I don't know.
So if I like The Rock even said this himself, and I'm gonna be real. I think that he wanted to turn Cody.
Well,
I
he
think he
said
was.
that, yeah,
Yeah,
he
but yeah,
said that, yeah.
he said that himself. But like I think that was like, I think that there's a part of him that was maybe like somewhat internally hard pressed on that idea of that being the route to go, and Cena being the baby face going into WrestleMania while the guy Cody Rhodes being the heel, and I guess giving Cena his moment or whatever like that, and they flipped it and things like that. But I think internally, maybe more than The Rock probably let on let off to the public, I think that he was probably like hard pressed on that idea. Cause maybe it was his idea, like the well, it was his idea, but I'm talking about more so like get it, making sure that his idea fleshes out the way that he envisioned it in his head, and that not turning the turning out to be what it was. So
Yeah.
it's like
Let
it's so odd, man.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about Cena actually in just a minute. We have a lot of Cena stuff to get to.
Okay,
Let
okay, okay.
let's get to Japan real quick. There's not a ton here. The big thing, Kanosuke Takeshita winning the G1,
Yeah.
defeating Evil. in the finals. We also had Tomohiko Hashimoto passing away at 47. Maki Ito became a free agent, I believe, from Tokyo.
Yoshipro.
Yes, that one. Thank you. New Japan Stardom running a joint show in China. New Japan announcing matches for Destruction Kobe and also other September shows. They also announced the next two IWGP World Title matches, which would include Takeshita getting his shot at Zack Sabre Jr. at King of Pro Wrestling in October. Francisco Akira out of action and undergo surgery. And then Stardom crowned the winner of the 5-star Grand Prix, which I do not have here. But thoughts about any of that while I pull that up? Or you probably actually remember it.
I wanted to ask you this. So it just came to my mind because the Okada interview that NJPW just put out on their website. So what do you think is going to headline the Dome? To Takeshita and Tsuji, or you think it's going to be Okada and Tana?
Should be Okada and Tana.
I feel the same way.
We just talked about Cena. That's a different situation, I think your retirement thing should always close the show. Mm-hmm. That's your apex of emotion. You're not going to get back to that.
Yeah, 100%. Like I don't really have anything to add on that. Like I agree with you 100%. So yeah, I'm with you on that. I know Akira. He was on the that wrist. He fractured his wrist at the RevPro show. I think he was wrestling like Leon Slater, and he did like a Poison Rana, and he like when he came down for the Poison Rana, like for the flip, he like landed like he like smacked his wrist against the mat, and that's how he ended up fracturing. I think he was on the He was on some New Japan show and was on commentary with Chris Charlton for a little bit, but that's the last I heard of Akira. But yeah, got the Dome coming up, Takeshita and Tsuji. I think that's gonna be an interesting one because I remember Takeshita did like an interview and he was talking about like how he thinks like the crowd is gonna react to him at the Dome, and he thinks that he'll be like he said himself that he was like willing to be the bad guy in that scenario, so Tsuji can be the big baby face and have his grandiose. He didn't like give away the result, but he was just willing to be the bad guy in that situation because he's the outsider and things like that. And then on top of that, Josh, this shit is crazy. He is wrestling for DDT the day before that Tokyo Dome show. Oh, and I'm really? Like, yeah, dog, he's wrestling for DDT the day before the Tokyo Dome. And I'm like, who the fuck cleared that?
Right.
Why would you clear? And then on top of that, which you had mentioned earlier, Josh, he might go to the finals of the Continental Classic, which is on the 27th of December. So then you got this match. He's already working the Continental Classic. He's probably going to go to the finals of the Continental Classic. He's going to have, you know what I'm saying, a great-ass match with Okada. And then a couple days later, he's got the DDT show. And then the next day, he's got the Dome.
That's a week.
We get sued. That's I'm thinking about that. And I mean, of course, you know, he's obviously contracted all three promotions. But it's like the day before the Dome, DDT. What are y'all doing? Like that's not that. I don't know about that one, man. Like that's something because you just never know what can happen. The day before the Dome, like you just never know. But
I hear you. Yep.
But yeah.
All right, let's stretch because we have some WB, a lot of WB to talk about here. All right.
Jesus Christ.
I know, man. I know this whole year has been crazy with WB news. All right, let's get to SummerSlam, which for the first time, I believe first time, two nights in August. And, of course, we had Cody Rhodes defeating John Cena for the WB Championship just like 2 days before. Cena just turned babyface on SmackDown. That Brock Lesnar made his return on this show, of course, out of nowhere at the very end as Cena was in the ring getting his praise from the crowd, laid out John Cena, and he is back, quote unquote, full time. There were some questions on who brought Brock back, because obviously the Vince McMahon Janelle Grant lawsuit still going on. He was mentioned that even back in 2 years. And WB said essentially it was John Cena's request to do this, and John Cena was asked about this later. Right. Said they deal him, I play him. So there's some question of who wanted him, who back, and I'm going to guess that probably WB wanted Brock back, and that's what happened. Paul Heyman talking to Errol Helwani said you ain't going to be able to cancel Brock Lesnar because a lot of people were pissed off. And then Janelle Grant's legal representative issued a statement on Lesnar's return. Also on this show, the Brock news seemed almost bigger than this. Seth Rollins made his surprise return from his knee injury. Money in the Bank cash in, pin Punk. CM Punk had just defeated Gunther to win the world title in the ring, crying, emotional, all that. And then, like, all of a sudden, Rollins came out of crutches, threw the crutches aside. Everyone knew what was happening at that point, and then beat him in a minute. So he said he fooled the entire world, which nobody, of course, believed. Triple H later talked about Lesnar's return, says it's incredible to have him back. Company had bring on Wingstop as a big sponsor. Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss won the tag team titles during the weekend. Jelly Roll lost his WWE in-ring debut. He wanted to lose at SummerSlam, the tag match him and Randy Orton against Logan Paul, and why am I blanking on who?
Drew McIntyre.
Drew McIntyre, correct. Said the SummerSlam match is the greatest show he's ever done. He had an injury he suffered in his first week of training. I believe it was a broken pinky or a broken finger. No more press conferences after shows. No big surprise. They're just going in front of the fans.
Because I saw that one coming.
Yeah, so the fans can chant things. They want to cheer for Edge. They have cheered for Karrion Kross. We'll talk about in a minute. The Hardy Boys and the Dudleys made appearances in the crowd. Becky Lynch got new theme music. Company announced they did the SummerSlam tryouts. They announced the MVP of those for the first time, who's Rain Leverickson, who is a female wrestler from overseas. And also RFK Jr.'s niece took part in the tryouts as well. Tyrese Halliburton from the Indiana Pacers said he was supposed to walk out with John Cena prior to his injury. He was hoping to walk out with the NBA Finals trophy. Neither would happen, of course. Karrion Kross reacted to that unreal, as he called it, Triple H SummerSlam moment, because Triple H played off like they were chanting for Brock. And then Bret Hart, this whole thing about them not having a seat for him, say he doesn't feel appreciated by WWE following the incident. Kevin Nash was joking about it after. And out of all these things, Bret Hart not getting a seat is newsworthy. Thoughts about this very newsworthy two nights of SummerSlam?
Man, I think the obvious thing is to start off with the Brock Lesnar return, like amid the him his involvement in that being named in the sex trafficking lawsuit, the Janelle Grant sex trafficking lawsuit against WWE Vince and well, formerly now John Laurinaitis, because he got dropped from the lawsuit because he agreed to provide cooperative evidence for Janelle Grant. Like it was so like interesting though to see like their internal reaction and how they went about, like, because I mean, they wouldn't address it anything. And like you talk about the press conferences, like I was just talking about this the other day, and I'll circle back to the Brock situation. But I always remember when Triple H, when Paul Levesque would do these press conferences, and he would always try to do this thing where he'd be like, oh yeah, we'll take one more question. And that last question was like a fucking heater. About like about the lawsuit, about the sex trafficking lawsuit, or it'd be like, I remember I forgot what they, I know they were overseas. They were in
France,
and I think it was when Punk when Punk came back. I mean, when Punk showed up and he caused Drew McIntyre the world title. I think it was that show Clash of the Castle. I think that was Scotland, and I remember Lucas yes. Sharpio.
Yes,
I remember he. Triple H was doing it. He was doing a presser, and he was like, "Oh yeah," he was like, "Yeah, I'll take one more question." And they had passed it over to Louise, and he had asked about I think it was the Ronda Drew Gulak situation that Ronda had caught him. She said he grabbed her drawstring on her sweatpants, and you could just tell that he was like thrown back by that question. And that happened like quite a bit throughout all of those press conferences before they eventually switched it over to the format that they have now. But the Brock thing, dude, like, especially when you hear Heyman go on national television and do the whole, I mean, we're going a big platform like Helwani's and do the whole, well, you know, you can't cancel Brock Lesnar. And I'm like, but it's like these people, like the way that they speak about these things, they speak about it as if the public doesn't know what he was accused of. Right. Like, we have read these things, you know, the whole him essentially Vince McMahon offering up Janelle Grant as a piece of the contract to get Brock Lesnar to resign to WWE. Yeah. And then, you know, the whole thing about him trying to meet up with her, but there was like a weather issue and that prevented that from happening. And then him requesting her to send like videos of herself like urinating and all type of weird ass shit like that. And it's but the way that they react to these things and the way that they address these things, like it always like the first thing that always come to my mind is how do the women on the roster feel about those things, and how do some of the other individuals on the roster who are quote unquote like outspoken or have differing opinions that the overall company has like aligned themselves with, like how do they feel about that? And it doesn't like it doesn't help because nobody like really says anything. Everybody just kind of like stays quiet on the matter, and nobody like really says shit. But it's so crazy to me, man, to see how they like just they don't give a fuck. Like they just like, I mean, it is what it is,
They're
and
at
he did what he did.
a point where they're making so much money, everyone is doesn't want to upset the apple cart, so to speak, and everyone's now it's a good place to be in. They'll go along with it, and WWE has put themselves in a position where it's kind of like we don't want to be questioned by people. How do we avoid that? And it's simply you eliminate press conferences. You don't do interviews with like any real serious outlets. And it's interesting because Dana White always meets with the media after major UFC events and some other ones, but mainly he also is as Contender Series too. And he's always done that. It's very rare that he won't be there. It's usually newsworthy if he doesn't. But for the most part, he'll at least answer the questions. People may not like what he says, but he at least answers them. And WWE does not want to do that. And it's interesting because they're really trying to position Levesque as like the next Dana White, and he's in the WrestleMania ad very prominently. They're really just putting him so front and center, but they won't let him do the same things that Dana White does. And it's a weird kind of like, a weird kind of
But
paradox, I guess you could say, right?
and it's because he doesn't handle himself well in those press
No,
conferences. Like
he freezes, yeah.
he never had like we've seen it since 2024 when he first got asked about the Janelle. It was after the Royal Rumble 2024 when he first got asked about the Janelle. Because remember, John, that happened. That lawsuit dropped like 2 days before the Rumble, and or two or 3 days before the Rumble. And I remember talking about it at the time. I think I sent like a tweet out or something like that, and I'm like, you would think somebody in the company would be like, okay, we need to prep you on how you're going to respond to these things because this just dropped a couple of days before the show, and if you think that we're not going to get questioned on this, then you're crazy. And he just went in there, and I will never forget. He said, "Oh, I didn't read it. Bullshit. You like what?" Talk about you ain't read it. And I mean, I'm not even saying like he didn't go through the whole document, but dog, that's your father-in-law. It's no way that you did not read some of the
Of course.
details that came out about that man. It's no way. There's nobody that can resist even wanting to know what exactly he's being accused of. And there's no way that you didn't even hear it in passing from individuals in that circle. It's
Right.
no, it's like it's
Yeah.
not
If
possible.
you're with a company and that's the boss and you're that high up, and as you point out, it's his father-in-law. Of course, anyone's been married in the history has a relationship, you're gonna be like, oh, I don't care about that. Of course, because it's gonna be a huge fucking thing in your family. That's the whole
Exactly.
thing. Yes.
Exactly. But it was so like, and then on top of that, like what me and you just said, what you and I just said, it's like he never handled himself well in those press conferences. It was just like time after time after time after time, and then it got worse that one time in Berlin when they had asked Cody about the Vince McMahon sex trafficking lawsuit, and
Yeah.
Cody gave a better answer than Levesque did, and they
Totally.
was like, God damn, because I remember because he had to leave because he I think he had like a family commitment or something like that, and they had asked Cody about it, and Cody gave, I mean, it was a answer that you would expect, but it was like it wasn't like a hesitation answer or a back down answer. It was, he said what he said, and that was that. But like, it was just like very glaring to me how, like, when you look back on it over the last year, almost 2 years now, that like he was doing those press conferences, and it's just like he bombed. And like anytime it was like a rough question or like it wasn't even a rough question. It was just most like anything that was pertinent, and it always was related to most of the time the lawsuit, the Janelle Grant sex trafficking lawsuit against WWE. And you would think, especially after the first one and how badly that went, that somebody would have been like, okay, well, maybe we should do a better job of trying to prep him for these questions. And it was just like every time he just like it was ridiculous, dude. But like going back to the overall point, and like it is like they don't I don't yeah, they don't give a damn. Like I think that WWE is at a point where they're making like so much money. And you know, they don't, you know, you could do those like the four match cards and you know, do record gates and things like that. And when you t in terms of like, you know, like I don't know if you want to get into the political atmosphere of the whole situation that's going on right now with them and their affiliation with Trump, because I feel like I'm gonna end up going on a fucking tangent about that. So I'll try to
Well, we got yeah, we have a lot of other headlines to get through.
That's what I'll say. I'll keep it say that for later when we got some time. But yeah, it was very interesting over this last year and 2024 to see how they sort of pivoted away from the press conferences basically to avoid not being able to handle questions that, like you say, even comparison to Dana White, who really wouldn't duck those questions. So, yeah.
So speaking about money, we had a big money deal because this is another big development. So we learned that during this month of August that WWE's PLE is going to be heading to ESPN. Initially, we thought heading in 2026, starting with WrestleMania. So and their deal beginning in April. Some contract details emerged. Obviously, it was a big money deal, 5 years, I believe. And then later in the month, all of a sudden, it's like, nope, we're going to kick this off sooner than later. And what happened was, of course, the deal kicked off in September with a brand new WrestlePalooza, a term totally made up by WWE. No one ever named an event WrestlePalooza before, right?
Hey, did you see the Mark Shapiro interview they did with Andrew Martin? But he was like Paul Levesque and Nick Khan created
Oh, that's
it.
right. Yes, they keep carrying it. Yeah, Paul Heyman just like, you remember me? Obviously, we kick off the ESPN era and ESPN starting this new streaming service and all that. Triple H saying that PLEs be more of a spectacle than ever before. This would begin a run of Triple H really publicly building up things, and then afterwards being like, "What was that about? There wasn't anything there." You know, we met. There's an episode of Raw that this is going to change everything and all this, and expect surprises. And then afterwards, be like, "Where are the surprises? There's nothing there." Nick Khan talked about clarified how many PLEs were in the deal. 12. There's some update. There's a big question in terms of how people are going to get it because people are like, "I don't really want to pay $30 a month." So there's obviously if you have a cable subscription or if you have like YouTube TV or some of the ESPN, the idea is you're going to be able to use your subscription to be able to get access to this new platform at least for a while. But only a few providers have that, and hopefully it's going to be more in 2026. Peacock, we learned that they made a $275 million a year bid for the PLEs, and they also were looking at a separate deal for WrestleMania. We're kind of looking at John Cena's remaining schedule and how that would be affected, and that would obviously change a little bit after the Peacock deal ended early. ESPN certainly would be interested in bidding for library rights. We don't know what's going to happen with that, but we know the ESPN or WWE is talk or TKO rather, all these names. TKO is talking to somebody about that, and that should be announced pretty soon. And we started to kind of learn about the Peacock ESPN arrangement, and that Saturday night's main event was going to become exclusive to Peacock as part of this. US or NBC Universal also getting like the SmackDown next day rights and all that. And that, yeah, Saturday night's main event area exclusively is part of the deal. Going to last through the NXT portion, going to last through March, and then we'll kind of see what happens from there. But there's a multi-year deal for SmackDown. Saturday night's main event is included in that. So a lot of kind of machinations and all that. But yeah, this was a big thing, and there's been a lot of talk of how is it doing. I think it's still early, way too early to tell. I think one of the things we are learning is that people, after paying next to nothing for these PLEs forever, either the WWE Network and the $9.99, or if you're talking about Peacock, a lot of people have Comcast and all that, just get everything for free. If you're asking them to pay $30, I think they're learning it's pretty tough. Pretty tough to all of a sudden be like, oh yeah, we're good. We're going to start paying $30 again. And yeah, I think it was a start that came super early, but it's way too early to say it's not a success. And I think we'll see what happens come WrestleMania season. That'll be kind of their big runway. And hopefully, I'm going to guess at that point, Comcast will be all set up, YouTube TV will be all set up, all these other streaming providers that offer ESPN, giving Free access essentially to all these other millions of people, and I think that'll help quite a bit because I think that $30 price point is a real sticking point. And WWE really has made it to point to not mention that so much and hiding from it when and so clearly they're affected by it too.
Hey, Josh, what did you make of Freddie Prinze Jr.'s comments about like he had a friend at Disney who said that they weren't happy at all with
Sure.
the ESPN deal?
I think we're at a point where in our news cycle for everything, where we just go off something someone said and we don't question it at all, right? Did this, he could have talked to someone, does this person have any knowledge? What do they do for ESPN? What, or
Yeah,
did Disney, is it someone that's just, is
that's a
it,
good point.
you know, I think, but it's a single sourcing thing, right? If it's like, if they're upset about it, like, who, like, I need to know, I don't know, you know, who the person is, but like, how would they know? And that's the thing, it's just like a source of the ESPN or Disney. Who are they? Do they are they like do they work in movies? They know like I it's a
Because you went because it was the timing of it drew like some. Like I guess like the inner writer in me like the like it because I remember the week prior Burke Magnus had did an interview I think with Jimmy Trina I believe and he was like he got asked about the WWE part and I mean what else is he gonna say but like I mean it was you know they were actively in the middle of a partnership but he was just like oh it's great like we love it and everything's fine and you know we're happy with the thing but I mean I'm aware enough to recognize like again they're in the middle of an active partnership like I don't think he would go out here and say anything ne remotely negative about WWE, but one thing I will say though that I wouldn't directly say like lends credence to what Freddie Prinze Jr. said, but it is the coverage of WWE on ESPN that has been very interesting to me to like a certain degree. Like I mean, of course they you know when it comes time for those big events, they'll like. You know, they'll send the stars on and they'll send the wrestlers on to like do on first take and they'll do the get up and you know they'll do like the usual the rounds on ESPN and go through all the different pockets and sections of the company and stuff like that. But like I remember I was watching I think it was last night I was watching Scott Van Pelt and like they did like the WWE coverage and it was like highlights and then they just moved on to, like that's all like it was just they just show like
Yeah.
highlights of the show and then
It's a weird thing,
They
yeah.
went right to the next thing. Like, I'm talking about, they didn't even mention. Like, it was like they went straight to the highlights, and then they was like, they went straight into the Stuart Scott documentary that came out. Like, they went straight into it, no mention of WWE. It was just like, hey, here's what happened.
Well, there's a lot of sports fans that don't like wrestling.
Yeah,
And they're like,
that's
what? They're like,
very
why?
true.
They're like, why is this? And
Very
you see
true.
this in some like non-wrestling threads, like Reddit and other places. They're confused as to why is ESPN covering this like it's real, you know? And so it's a big thing. But I think we're not going to know anything until WrestleMania. I think the fact that they haven't released any viewership numbers yet tells a lot. But they also, I think they realize that people aren't going to pay $30 a month for it. WWE fans, and even though their fans travel, that's a big term, travel. And that they'll go to different services and will pay for it. I think what you're seeing is a lot are not doing that. And I think a lot will once you get that access. So I think WrestleMania, we'll see. Royal Rumble could be a big one. But I think WrestleMania afterward, they're going to release some sort of number. And they'll say, oh, we had, you know, I think that's when you'll start to get some of those numbers out and all that. But it's early. I mean, they're what's 7 months ahead or 8 months, 8 months ahead when they're supposed to. It takes a long time to ramp some of the stuff up and especially a new streaming service. Yeah, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, it makes sense, but yeah, it's a weird fit for the coverage, to your point. Yeah.
What do you before we move on to the next thing, what did you make of like what do you think is going to happen with the like after the Peacock deal comes up in March 2026 as far as like NXT, you think they'll move that over to Netflix or what do you think they'll
I think it's going to depend on who's the biggest bidder, but I also think they really like this strategy of different media partners to ice out AEW, right? And they already have a bunch of them. I don't think Fox is interested. I mean, I think they've kind of burned that down. I mean, Mark Shapiro threw some jabs at them about how they sold UFC and all that. I just don't think Fox is really that into it. I don't think Prime is probably into it. They might be, but I'm going to guess not. But they could be. So yeah, I think they'll look for maybe a new avenue. But yeah, I could see a Netflix thing. I guess I could see Peacock, but Peacock maybe just like we're kind of good unless it's the right price. Again, it just depends on Peacock has the leverage where they can be like, they know how many people are watching it. And if there's like, this is a value of X to us, I don't think they're going to put it on, you know, their main. Like, well, they, I mean, I guess they could put. It's weird to have PLEs. Here's the thing, though, is like for people that aren't like us, casual fans, it makes sense if you're like, I can watch it here and then I can watch it on the same thing, right? So if you have it on a different platform, if you did like if like Fox picked it up, or say Amazon did, just for whatever, like there's, why would someone casually stumble on that, right? And they probably won't because they're already watching on the CW and there's no natural kind of thing. But I could see Netflix probably making a lot of sense, but it's not going to be, I don't think, a huge money deal. But you know, again, Peacock maybe they make an offer, just like, yeah, we'll keep this for X amount and go for it. I don't know. A lot of possibilities. All right, let's go over this first gen. We had a lot of WWE stuff. Let's go to so I'll read through all these and we'll kick it over to you for thoughts. There's a lot here. So obviously, not just SummerSlam. We had Clash in Paris, John Cena taking on Logan Paul. They reshot this final SmackDown segment for USA Network airing for when Logan Paul punched John Cena. There was two different cuts of it, and they didn't really seem that much different. But it was kind of funny because they both made their way online, and it's just kind of funny seeing Roman Reigns made his return to the show, picked up win over Bronson Reed, and then was stretchered out. Seth Rollins got some surprise help in the it was a four-way world title match, retained the title, got help from his wife Becky Lynch. Company thanked Peacock during during the broadcast as their PLE is moving to ESPN. And I mentioned that stretcher angle as well. Michael Cole named his all-time favorite broadcast partner Taz of all time, which is good. Company filed trademark for the Seth Rollins stable name, The Vision, which soon would not be his stable name after he got turned on. Nikki Bella shared an update after suffering a displaced breast implant on Raw. How about that?
Was that when Piper Niven gave her the like she like dove on her,
That
and
might that makes sense. Yeah.
Because I remember that clip that went around of Io, Stephanie, and Rhea on the ring rope, and like when she felt like it was that clip of them going, oh, like oh damn, like it's like that. It was like a clip that went viral and them reacting to it. I think that was exactly what that was. Like
Yeah.
she landed straight. Like that shit was rough.
That's tough.
I was like,
That's
God damn.
tough.
But yeah.
Braun Strowman said WWE doesn't care about the fans. Bret Hart said Hulk Hogan was a roadblock in his career. Vince McMahon, Triple H, Kid Rock, has this list. Kid Rock attended Hulk Hogan's funeral. Brooke did not. His daughter Brooke did not, saying that he wouldn't have wanted a funeral. McMahon and WWE stars were interviewed for Fox's The Real The Real Hulk Hogan documentary, rather. Brooke said that fear of Scientology contributed to removal from her removal from her father's will. There's a report that a medical malpractice may have caused Hogan's death. Brooke Hogan opened up about visiting his father's body, saying he looked ready for a pay-per-view. Hogan's widow also said she was planning a medical malpractice lawsuit. WWE Unreal finished in the Netflix top 10. TKO announced their financials for the quarter. Paul Heyman said the whole deal with Travis Scott's involvement in the John Cena angle fell apart. And then we had the whole Karrion Kross thing. So Karrion Kross and Scarlett's contract expired, which led to a lot of talk that ended up being about absolutely nothing. He said his recent contract discussions left him profoundly disappointed. He said he was told by certain people not to acknowledge fan support. He said he's not playing a game. This is real because everyone thought it was a work, and apparently it was not. And that he started to have his first post-WWE bookings announced and welcomed more, saying he was open for business. CM Punk heading back out the road for the UK, and he was appearing in all the house shows out there. WWE collaborating with the King of the Hill cartoon for the following episode of SmackDown, rather. Roman Reigns named his favorite all-time opponent, that being Brock Lesnar. Ashante the Adonis announced his departure from the company. Casey Catanzaro had been released early in the year, returned to the world of American Ninja Warrior. A judge ordered the release of Janelle Grant's medical records from Peak Wellness, and I guess this could have been the NXT section, but Lola Vice signed an extension with the company. I think she'll be, I think, a main roster star at some point sooner or later. She seems to have it. And yeah, I think they like her a lot. Thoughts about any of that?
A lot of stuff that happened
That's right.
in that section. I had just saw the thing on Sunday. I had saw BJ Bethel's report from SE Scoops about the about the suit that they had got filed against Dr. Colin Coker when he was like trying to prevent the release of like Janelle Grant's medical files and things like that. And I think that eventually it got he got ordered to release those files. It was like over, I think, over like hundreds of documents that belong to Janelle Grant. But yeah, it was like some of the stuff that I was reading about that. It was like that shit is like absolutely like ridiculous. When I'm talking about like he, like the whole some of the stuff in there like about in injecting certain things like like fluids and stuff into her body and like not informing her what these things were and all that type of stuff. I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, bro. But
Yeah, not good. Not good.
yeah, not good at all. But dude, like, all right, so I wanted to talk about the Hogan, like, but all right, look, my whole thing is, I'm very much past that point, and I have been for a very long time of separating the individual from the person that they played on television or the impact that they had on whatever field they were in. There's no longer any that left a long time ago for me about those separating things, especially when you start talking about well, I'm gonna say for me when I start I would say like over the last like 8 or 9 years when I become more politically aware and understanding like world history and understanding the history that I belong to as a black man in America, as a black person in America. It was fascinating to me to see a lot of people contribute what Hogan said, the racist comments that he said, as mistakes, right? And I'm not going to, because I know we got a lot of other stuff to cover in this section. But I think the issue that we have, bro, in America today is that people like to treat people, other people being racist, and that idiotic ass mindset and ideal and state of mind that individuals have as a phase or a mistake. And it's like the one thing that I hate is that it feels like a lot of people, they treat people being racist as some type of like fucking character development that they have in their life. Like it's like, oh, they're going through their racist phase.
Yeah,
Like,
it's a
oh,
phase, right?
like it's a fail.
Yeah,
No, they'll get
yeah,
over it. Like, and I'm like, it's the most illogical and dumb shit that I've like, especially again as I become more aware. And like I've all like I'm not trying to go on a whole tangent about this though, but like it's like sometimes I can't help it. But like the first time that I've ever like truly became aware of like I would say like racism against Black Americans was when George Zimmerman murdered Trayvon Martin. That was the first time that I legitimately remember. I was in high school, I think I was in 11th grade, and I was walking up to the library, and I remember I had a class, a history class, where the teacher had us like download like the CNN app. And I had this thing on my phone still, and I remember getting the little updates about it. And I'm reading it, and I'm on my way to the back of the library to meet my friends. I ended up going to the computer lab to search this thing up, and like that was the first time when my mind was like had this sort of moment of realization of and seeing a reaction to it of what this country really is and how the racism specifically towards Black people in America has been sort of pertinent and how it can be profitable to a certain extent to be racist. Like think about back in February when the woman in Minnesota, when she called the black child the hard R, she got in trouble for that, put up a GoFundMe, and she got $500,000, Josh. People donated $500,000 to this lady. She called a black child the hard R and got 500. Josh, it's people out here who got cancer, dog, that can't even get 10K in donations. This lady called a child the hard R and got 500 grand. And then even look at the what just happened recently. And I think that was also in Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. The lady who worked at the shop when the Somalians came in, she called them the hard R and she got fired from her job. These people gave her 50 grand. Again, though, it's people out here who fighting cancer, who got all these different diseases and all these different people struggling out here that can't even get $1,000 in donations. But again, I think that's the state of the country we in, where being racist is profitable. And I think that's materialized through society not dealing with racism at the various points when we should have dealt with it. And you can even date that back to the fucking what happened after the Civil War, when the Confederates were just allowed to just go back into society after continuing on the 400 years of enslavement, and they just got to, hey, okay, guys, look, bygones be bygones. Yeah, that happened, but just listen, we're all good now. We're all human. We're all like, going back to just a real point, just to wrap this up, you can't keep continuing this fucking 6-century cycle. This has been going on for 6 centuries now, like, of this treating racism as if this is just this thing that should just be allowed to just permeate in society, because that has led to where we are at right now, where being racist to one particular group has somehow parlayed into everybody being affected and feeling it because this hasn't been addressed. And this is the last thing I say about it. I swear I won't get on my soapbox about it. I really did. But it's so crazy to me how I will always see this, and people be like, oh man, well, you know, yeah, I can't believe what I'm saying right now. Like, this is fascism. This is fascism. This is fascism. I keep hearing that word. And I'm like, dog, I want y'all to think about everything that over the last, we could just mark it down to the last 200 years about Black people in America, right? I want you to think about like the over-policing, the constant medical malpractice that Black women specifically go through, the constant experiments, talk about the Jim Crow, the Black codes, like all these different things. Like, even there's a point in America where a Black person couldn't even travel without getting the approval of a white person. And all these things that have led up to this point. And it's like, what do you think that was? That's fascism. The over-policing the communities, the constant, the police brutality, all those different things. That shit is fascism. But like, it always seems like it never gets focused on, because I think that America has become very conditioned to believe that when this stuff happens to Black folks, it's like, oh, that shit is supposed to happen because that shit has been happening for the last 6 centuries. So like, when everybody gets affected by it, everybody's like, oh my God, what is this? And then you got all these people over here that's like, this shit is happening, and people have been trying to tell y'all this is what this is. So again, my whole thing about the Hogan thing, I'll just wrap it up like this and we can move on to the next thing. Dog, please stop treating racism as if it's some fucking character development. It's not. It's fucking idiotic. The idea of believing that someone is better than someone or because of your skin color, it is the dumbest shit in the world. It does not make sense. It never will make sense. And that's all I got to say. I'm sorry, John.
Well put. Let's go over some other WWE headlines here, and we'll actually get back then in just a second, because WWE planning a big main event for PLE Opposite All Out. That, of course, would be WrestlePalooza. We heard about that, the broadcast location, Indianapolis, and all that. So that was happening earlier in the month. And we didn't even mention WrestlePalooza, yeah, going essentially opposite All Out, but All Out would obviously move up earlier. We'll talk more about that later in the series. McMahon was featured, Vince McMahon, of course, featured in the trailer for that TMZ Hogan documentary, where he said it was a blow to his heart that Hogan died. And then, to your point earlier, he wasn't a racist. He said some racist things. And then he said he was also angry following Hogan's last Raw appearance, kind of taking a shot at WWE for kind of how they presented him and all that. A random headline, Charles Robinson, the referee taking the emergency room for a bat bite. The company revealed that on sale date for WrestleMania 42 combo tickets. Apollo Crews back to training in the ring. He's been out for a very long time. And let's see, we had an update in the timeline for Liv Morgan's return. It was said to be probably early 2026. As we know, that would certainly be a lot different. Her in-ring return, perhaps, but she would return at last month's Survivor Series. We had Logan Paul got married. Sami Zayn changed brands to SmackDown. LA Knight headed to Raw. The company filed trademark for both former and current NXT wrestlers' names, including Scott Dawson, Dax Harwood in the AEW. Very random. Sean Spears and Slapjack, of all people. So that made some fun things on social media when that got revealed. Jade Cargill and Naomi pitched using mace and razors at Evolution. That would have been, I would have loved that. Just wild, wild, crazy stuff. Naomi and Jimmy Uso announced pregnancy and the women's world title vacated on Raw. So I want to say it's bad timing for Naomi. She just won the title. But man, obviously, people have kids when they have kids, and that's part of the story. Yeah. Cody Rhodes said part of his story is locked behind a wall. And then people assume that to be the AEW NDA and all that. So we'll see if that book, whenever he writes that book, because I've said this whole series, he and Brandy want to talk. And I think they're going to talk. And I think there's no doubt about it. Date was set for John Cena's retirement match. Of course, that's coming up this Saturday as we talk right now. The next Saturday night's main event was set for November in Salt Lake City. Of course, this is all kind of announced as part of that whole Peacock thing. Kevin Owens replaced Rey Mysterio at a NASCAR event doing the Start Your Engines thing, I believe, or the Grand Marshal or something like that. I can't remember the term. Also provided a positive update on neck surgery and when he hoped to return. So at some point in 2026, there's talk that both the Undertaker and Mike Tyson were going to appear in an Indian reality show. Yes, this is where we're at in 2025. And then the company added a Melbourne live event to their October Australia schedule. Thoughts about any of that?
Man, like there's some quick hits. Apollo Crews, he back now.
He is now. Yes.
He made the AAA appearance. So yeah, Apollo back in the mix.
I don't think he's long for WWE.
I don't either.
And I think it's kind of one of those with guys like him. It's kind of one of these like that choose your own adventure. Or we went to that Fork Road. He signed WWE, and so many people do. I wonder if at that point, if he had to do it all over again, if he may would chose a different path. I don't know. There's been so many things he did, the Nigerian accent, and that a lot of people had issues with that. But he's been so injured. He had all this buzz on the indies, and I just wonder, does he still have that in him? Would he go back if he got released and try to get that again? I don't know. It's kind of just tough. He's had a lot of injuries, they just haven't used him. And I don't know. I think he's one of those guys that if in April or whenever, if they do a bunch of cuts, I wouldn't be surprised to see him cut.
I think that he was also a like one of those like infamous products. And when I say infamous, I mean more so like it happened consistently, specifically around that time period, like of a too early NXT call up, like yes. very early. Like he got called up very early and like with no idea. Like it was like, okay, yeah, guy's great physique, he can wrestle. Okay, let's see what we can do. And like nothing happened, and it was just a constant. He won the United States title, and he won the Canada title. He had the Nigerian persona that he, I think he later said that he wasn't like that big of a fan of to a certain degree. I wouldn't be surprised either. Like obviously, I don't want to hope nobody lose their job, but like I don't really
it's a numbers game. These rosters are huge now.
I was about to say, especially with the NXT talent, like it's like again, you talking about like the Javons and the Ricky Saints and the other individuals who are sort of on their way up, man, and like you got to make room.
And they have a lot, of women, right? All these women people are really interested in seeing. Yeah, it's hard. It's
loaded.
Yeah,
like it's yeah. So like it's yeah, man. I guess we're gonna see, but I mean, I'm assuming like they'll probably just finish out the rest of that time in AAA. I mean, but you never know; they might end it up. I mean, you see what happened with Santos Escobar? Well, we haven't seen
Santos. That's Escobar, right, exactly. Signs for more money, and then has not been seen since. Yeah,
see what I mean? So it might happen for Apollo too, man. You never know. But yeah, like you said, Liv Morgan back. The Naomi thing, man. Like, dude, it was like. Of course, I'm very happy for her and Jimmy. I think it's very cool seeing people become parents. I think that's one of the coolest things ever, seeing folks, have children and stuff like that, going to have their families and, all that type of stuff. But I was like, damn, bro. Like, it was like she was, what I'm saying? She was rocking and rolling. I'm like, that's a tough time in terms of, like, career-wise. I'm pretty sure, like, that her like, in terms of what she values and, what she wants for her future and stuff, that's probably – towers over all that, but like but basically what I'm saying, it was cool to see her finally find this thing that was outside of what we've seen from Naomi for like the last decade. And she kind of found her own way and did her own thing, but it was kind of similar in TNA. She was still the big baby face and things like that, but it was cool to see her transition and sort of become this world champion level act, and eventually got the world title, and then it got, cut short. But definitely big congratulations to her and Jimmy.
That was the best. That was the best thing for her, was that TNA run. Her
Yeah,
leaving
dude,
after
I
the whole
agree.
Mercedes thing,
I agree.
she got there, and it was fun watching in that run. That was fun. And TNA is independent. She did her own thing. And at some point, you kind of figure she probably is going to go back, and if there's a right opportunity. But she spent the better part of like half a year there, or
Yeah,
more,
she was
won
there.
the
She was there.
title, was in the mix, and people really took to her. She kind of found herself. And that, without that, I don't think it would have been as big when she came back. It would have been notable, but I think she just had something where it just, I think that just kind of was a lot of seeding for what was to come for the future. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
100. No, you good. I 100% agree with you. I did like how she put over Jordan on the way out of TNA. And I remember Scott D'Amore had did an interview, and he was talking about like how like Tr Trinity wasn't like she wasn't like obligated to do that. Like her final date was that Hard to Kill when she lost the belt to when she lost the belt to Jordan. And Scott was like, that was supposed to be it. And Trinity was like, no, we're gonna go out, and I'm gonna do business before I go back. And Jordan's gonna get another win over me. And then a couple weeks later, I think Jordan was in the Royal Rumble right with her. So that was a whole thing. But yeah, man, I it'd be interesting. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's a ways away to like see how Naomi eventually gets worked back into the mix. But I wanted to touch on your Cody thing, man. Like Josh, I ain't gonna lie, man. I'm tired of the teases, bro. Like, can we just like s somebody say something? Like they've been doing this back and forth thing for like several years now, and it's like, can somebody say something about something, please? Because it feels like Cody wants to say something, but he doesn't say something. And like I remember specifically like when it was this whole conversation about who signed last the AEW and who built this and built that. I remember Kenny had did an interview. I think it was with Swerve when Swerve was still doing the Swerve City podcast with him and Montezzi, and Kenny was talking about like the beginning stages of AEW, and he was like he was very complimentary of Cody in that interview, and he was talking about how Kenny and the Bucks were focused more on the talent aspect of things. They were thinking about, oh, we got to get Jungle Boy, and we got to get Penta, and but they were thinking about the different talents and the people individually they could bring in. And Kenny was like, while they were thinking about that, Cody was like they were all in the hotel room, and Cody was just like, I mean, like, dude, we need like production trucks, and we need like a medical staff, and we need like, and he said that Cody had like a lot of the plugs for the like the connections to the to those individuals. Like he was the one that got Michael Sampson, Doc Sampson, in the AEW, because he was like, they need like a ringside medical staff and all those things. So it's always interesting to see like sort of the I guess like the fan responses to those things about like who like what had this whose role was more prominent within the formation of All Elite Wrestling and things like that. It's very interesting, man. But yeah, that's pretty much all I got for that section.
I'll ask you this, because I've asked other people this. I think if he violates his NDA and he talks, gives the whole story, there's no chance Tony Khan sues him, right? Because Tony Khan is going to look awful if he does. I think it'd be almost double awful, right? He would have not only, because I'm sure it's not going to be positive, and he is then, and if Tony Khan's like, okay, I'm going to sue you for doing this, he's going to look worse. He's like, oh, you should have kept this under wraps. I think he, Tony Khan, I think with these NDAs, and I've said this a lot in this year, I think he is in a no-win situation with the NDAs, because
I agree.
at some point, you can tell, as you mentioned, they want to talk. Brandy has something, you just tell.
Brandy wants to say something. I
She has
know.
something on his chest. She's just like, I am ready to get, she wants to unload with both chambers, right? Cody is willing to say some stuff. He's really started this year, as we go through his headlines, really starting to edge out and just kind of be like, he's ready, right? And I would think that same thing if Punk was to talk, and Punk hasn't really alluded as much as Cody and Brandy seem to be. Like, they want to say something. And yet you tell that Something seems to be really bothering Cody. You just mentioned when the whole thing about who gets credit for AEW and all this.
Yeah.
Something is really kind of bothering him. And I think in 2026 we're gonna get a full story.
Damn.
I'll do a bold prediction right now. And Tony Khan is not gonna do anything about it because he can't. He can, but he's gonna look awful if he does.
I can see that definitely about Cody saying like just letting it go in 2026. I don't think Tony would go take legal action because I think that Tony is a very I think Tony cares about the public perception of not all fans but his fan base mm-hmm. and what they think of him, and I think that matters to him. And not saying that he's like losing sleep over it at night, but I think I think it does matter to him what his fan base, what the AEW ROH fan base thinks of him as an individual and as a leader and as a company owner. So I think that will factor into any type of decision making that he makes in regards to even thinking about filing some type of lawsuit against Cody for speaking out. But I 100% agree with you. I think in 2026, either Cody or Brandy are going to say something, and I think whichever one says something first, the other domino is going to drop right after that.
Yep. If I'm Tony Khan, I have a simple response. Do you know how much Nightmare Factory bullshit I put on TV? And that's it. That's it. That's it. All right. Let's go. This is the final string of WWE stuff. We had WNBA player Kalani Brown commented on getting a DM to try out for WWE. Kelly Osbourne reacted to the disrespectful Raw mention of course, the late Ozzy Osbourne by Becky Lynch, made a crack at him about Birmingham, England. Joe Hendry appeared at a live event in Manchester, England. Aaron Roberts, Ice Williams, and Jordan Oasis were released from the WID program. The company announced a partnership with the Paris Saint-Germain FC, top international soccer/football club. Seth Rollins joined the Rich Eisen Show as a guest host. He would do that a couple times throughout the end of the year. Ethan Page and Chelsea Green were talked about potentially appearing together on the main roster, obviously doing a lot of stuff in NXT, but the people really seem to like them together, the nasty mm-hmm. Canadians. Raw set to start early for a few September weeks due to the NFL, so they're experimenting with a earlier start time at 7 o'clock. Cody and Brandi Rhodes, I just mentioned them, welcoming their second child. Sami Zayn won the United States title on SmackDown. You were talking about that earlier, defeating Solo Sikoa. Rhea Ripley, and this kind of this continuing story of talent being way more open with getting mobbed at airports and out and about and saying that complete mob by fans and no means no, WTF. Company announced the Road to Royal Rumble European Tour for 2026 leading into Saudi. A report broke that AJ Lee was brought up in numerous pitches internally within WWE. So clearly, at this point, everyone knew she was coming back. Triple H was honored to join the President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition. Cody Rhodes, we're just talking about this, after a quote-unquote schism with AEW, he's grateful to be with the biggest game in town.
Schism,
that's right. Triple H said the Vince McMahon allegations are totally separate and aside from what we do. That's a big thing. I had a Twitter clip that made its way around. What we do. Mr. Iguana Psycho Clown made their main roster debuts, answering a SmackDown open challenge, something I would not have thought that headline would happen at the beginning of the year, but it certainly did, with the inaugural men's and women's WWE ID champions crown, which were Kylie Rae and Jackson Drake, I believe, for ID. I think I have that name right. Sari, talking about her time WWE, said they made her play an anime character in a sailor uniform. And again, we talked earlier, there was a lot of Jericho to WWE chatter that began in the month of August. Thoughts about any of that?
Rather, first of all, since it was on the back end, so Sari, she's had like one of those years as well. Like I was mentioning, like Athena, like one of those sort of, I wouldn't say slept on, because I'm pretty sure it's pretty like a bunch of people who been paying attention and see like the work that she's doing. And like, I've even had, like I caught some of like the Sariism shows, like, and I primarily just like go watch her matches that she does on those. But like, she is like dead as like one of the most like physical like wrestlers like that I've seen. Like I'm talking about just in general, like everything looks fucking great and stiff. And it's like, I like even the match that she had with Suri at King of Pro Wrestling. Like I really like that match as well for the IWGP Women's Championship. And I know she's about to be facing Natsu Poi at Stardom during Queendom. Like it's like she's having like she, and she, I think she, I forgot what she did. She was in the, she competed for Stardom. No, she competed for Mighty Gold one day, and then she was wrestling for Stardom the next day. And I was like, you know what I'm saying? Like being able to do that, because like, you know, the two rival and Rossi Ogawa leaving, like I was like, that was a cool little moment right there when she literally did both on back-to-back nights. So yeah, I think she having a very, I'm not gonna say slept on year, but she's having a great year. Sari is. Like what Josh, what have you made of the WWID program? I had just saw they support the indie tweet.
Oh yeah, yes. I just don't see, I just don't see the point of it. Like, there's so much they want to have their tentacles everywhere. I understand that. I mean, it's great for some of these indie talents that are making, you know, I think it's a report like 30 grand or 25 grand a year, something like that. A
That's
lot
good.
indie wrestlers, that's something, right? It's a pipeline, but it's a pipeline, I guess, to NXT. They just have so many people. I don't know. It's another property to sell, and it's on Tubi. I never hear anything about it except that there's a title change, or occasion they've been on NXT a little bit more. So, I mean, it's okay. I don't really know what the point is, other than I don't. It's something to do with the indies, but I like. Put it this way, like I think they thought that when you put these WWID people titles on people and they go around the different indies, and all of a sudden you're gonna pop these big houses because oh, there's a WWE title defense. I don't see that, you know, because
I don't either.
you know, and I and so it's because I know like there's one happening in Maine that is coming up in January, but they're also the indie that they're doing it for is also having a big event. They're going to draw a big house anyway. So it's, I don't see it as, and they've had WWID people on there before, but they're part of kind of the storyline. I think with the indies, it's tough because from kind of what I know and what I've seen really works is that people in indies, if you're following it, they like storylines just like anyone else does.
Exactly.
It's not super indies like Warrior Wrestling at Chicago or something like that, where you just, or these big time wrestling shows where you're just like, we want to just put on a bunch of wrestlers people know, and they want to come out and see, and that's it. But there's no storylines here. It's just you're coming out to see people that you may have never seen before or matches or whatever. The ones that really do it right on the indies have stories, and it's not necessarily the biggest stars in the world, but it's those stories that matter and make people feel something, right? Just like in any other wrestling. And the ID program, it's fine, but the only benefit I see is some indie wrestlers get some extra money. And WB gets to understand if AEW is interested in a wrestler, they have the right of first refusal, so it's a way to do that. But also, there's some people where I don't are like. I think everyone thought like Zilla Fatu would be under an ID contract at this point, but he's not. I find that interesting. I find it interesting why AEW hasn't tried to make a run at him, given the I don't. There's certain like, it's not all the top indie stars. And now you have some people exiting the program. They let Kylie Rae go while she's pregnant.
Which is crazy.
I don't.
Zeta Steele,
Zeta
she left.
Steele, yeah, she left on her own and just made her debut at Ring of Honor. I just don't understand what the point is. And after this first year, like, is it a success? I don't know, because I still don't know what was the goal of it to begin with.
Yeah. And I'm gonna say, like you said, but like Zara Zacher left, a bunch of other people announced their departure. And I'm like, even like when you talk about the like, because it's not like there's going to be like some straight transition into the NXT product or the main roster product for these individuals. You got the ID program, and then out of the like a Kendall Gray just comes out of nowhere from the athlete program, and you got and you got like this ready-made talent who's like clearly, you know what I'm saying, like found her way, and she's about to get the rocket shot to her back. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's like, what's the like
Yeah,
what are we doing?
if they want to do an Evolve show, they could do an NXT talent that isn't used. It's the same thing. They didn't have to add another thing to bring people into the pro. They have this already for people that don't work a lot. You know, they'll work these NXT house shows and things like that that aren't on TV. They need something to do, so that would be Evolve. But now you're bringing in more people. I just don't get what the point of it is, other than to have some sort of reach in the indies. But is that valuable? It's not like, you know, it's not like indies, the indie crowds are necessarily like, I would say the pro WWE, but there's also that stigma as well, just of people just like, I don't want to have like WWE style in my promote, you know, and it may not be fair. It may not be, it's a whole like,
no, you're right.
It's a whole thing, right? I just don't get the point of it. So we'll see how this next year goes, but the first year of it, I just don't get it.
I don't get it either.
Yeah. Yep. Let's see. Let's go to, did we read this last? Oh yeah, we did read this last. Okay. So now we go to the junk drawer. This is the best of everything we've not talked about yet, which is hard to believe because we've talked about a lot. However, Raja Jackson, this whole scenario, my guy, I remember waking up to this and being like, what happened? And so this, obviously this incident happened out in, I don't know where, I can't remember where's, you know, where Knox Pro is based at? Is it Vegas or is it somewhere out west? I think.
Around Knox, I don't know. I got to pull it up right now. Knox Pro, because that's that's Rikishi's school, right?
Oh,
I'm not sure.
I don't know about
Knox Pro. Oh no, you're right. There is a Knox Pro that Rikishi has as a school, but that's something different. That's the Knox Pro wrestling event that was in Los Angeles.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So the son of Rampage Jackson, obviously a major MMA star, also was in TNA, which is such a strange time. He basically just beat the shit out of this wrestler, Psycho Stu. There's this whole backstage thing got misconstrued, and there's just no excuse for it. And he just just ground pound, just awful. Everyone is listening to this, I'm sure, has seen it. Rampage Jackson had issued a statement after this and basically said that, I don't know if it's in this interview or a different one, he's got a bunch of kids, and he said out of all the kids, this was the one that he put aside money for college money for his kids. For Raja, he put aside money for bail. That's what that said. He basically just, he knew that this something was going to happen. Knox Pro would issue a statement saying it irresponsible act of violence. The LAPD got involved. They cut the school, the Knox Pro to WB ID affiliation, just talking about that got pulled. Allegedly, the company.
You're right. That was the Rikishi. That was Rikishi school.
Okay, got it. Yeah. So his they were telling wrestlers not to speak with police. Mark Henry said that Psycho Stu shared the blame for the Jackson incident, which is crazy, and he gets shit for that. Another indie promotion advertised Raja Jackson in a venue, said he was banned from the venue. Psycho Stu eventually released from the hospital, and then he had, speaking of like GoFundMes and so on. Mr. Beast, Chris Jericho, and others donated to this, but this was, again, just a crazy story. And later in the year, more developments, because it took him a while to be arrested. There was a question if he was going to be arrested or not. Mm-hmm. It was clearly an assault, and even though it was wrestling, it was just, the whole thing was it was so surreal to watch, and you just feel so helpless. The guy was just getting, he's completely knocked out and just getting hit.
He was out.
The wrestlers have no idea what to do. It was just a whole, like, a shit show is the best way to describe it. And Stu finally getting out, but he's going to have injuries and effects from this the rest of his life. Just a strange situation that we didn't see coming from an indie show.
Yeah, definitely. That was like one of the most, probably most random things that I saw pop up on my timeline in 2025. Probably the most random thing. Like, so I saw the clips that came out before. I guess this is like before the, before that happened, they got into some type of like, got in each other's face or something like that. When, you know, him and Psycho school, like I guess beer can thing or whatever like that. And from like what it seemed like is they seemed like they squashed it before when Roger was supposed to make his run in, and then he just went in and did what he did. And then I remember there was a clip from another, from the same stream, when a wrestler had like, he was kind of hyping Roger's head up a little bit about it. He was like, you gonna let him do, like, you know, say, kind of amping him up a little bit. And I remember I was saying that shit. I was like, why the fuck would you, why would you say that? Like, why would you, you know, gas his head? He gassed his head up, and like before that happened, like, and I was like, what are you doing? And like, I don't buy the whole Raja thought that was the plan, or that's what he was supposed to, like. It's no fucking way that you thought that you were supposed to go in that ring and do that to him, and close fists to this man's face.
Right.
Like, that shit is insane.
And it wasn't just one punch. That's the thing. If there was a thing where they said, okay, do this and throw a work punch, and he threw one and it connected, and he's like, oh shit.
Right.
He hit him with like 20. I mean, he was like, there's no, that's not working. That's just losing your mind on someone. And no, 100%. I mean, no one wants to see it. And you remind
those
me.
Were like, that was like full force, like
it was ground and pound, and no defense, right?
That was rough, though.
And you brought up something I forgot about. There's a camera crew the entire time, filming this whole thing. So all the evidence is right. It's just like, wow, yeah. I mean, it's there's no.
What was the latest on the rock? Because I know he got picked up.
Yeah, I think that happened in September, October. I think we'll get to it in the series, but I haven't heard anything else about it. I assume he's out on bail and he's just awaiting. I don't know if it's sentencing or a trial date or. So I guess we'll see. I mean, the evidence is kind of there. I don't know. You don't want to see people thrown in jail for like no reason. It's just, it is, when you watch that.
It's fucking stupid.
It's so hard to be. I mean, it's this stupid, guy could have, though. He could have been like, honestly, could have been killed.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, in MMA, you don't see this, you know, because referees jump in and just a bad situation. We'll go through the rest of the month. Pete Dunne made a surprise appearance at Riot Cabaret Pro Wrestling. Samoa Joe set to work a rare indie match. This would end up being for his a wrestler that was retiring that had been really influential in his early part of his career. So that's why he did that. Brodito set to make their CML debut as a team. Mercedes Moné, the year of Moné, making a surprise appearance at Athena's MPX indie show. She and Alex Winza were set for a Rev Pro show the night before Forbidden Door, talking about, you know, working into matches for big events. She had another championship to her title belt collection, did like an indie title versus title match. MJF, remember this, won the CMLL light heavyweight title, and then a match, a title versus mask match, rather, versus Mystico was set for the CMLL 92nd anniversary show. Rev Pro announced they're inducting Jushin Liger into their Hall of Fame during Forbidden Door weekend. Cora Jade responded to some bully allegations from former NXT recruit Alexis, I believe it's Leet or Let. Rise and Indie Promotion denied that Jimmy Havoc is returning for them. Remember him? Joey Ryan, Indie Promotion canceled his appearance following backlash. Why Ann was trying to book Joey Ryan at this point, 2025, I don't know. Jonathan Gresham suffered a stroke. This is crazy. Two strokes in August, and detailed this whole scary situation. And Jordan Grace actually was talking about seeing like on a ring camera or something like that. She saw the ambulance pull up, and she's like, what is going on? So just a crazy situation. He's finally set to make his return. Dana White from the UFC saying indie wrestlers should come to Power Slap and make a shitload of money. And actually, we learned there were some indie wrestlers that were contact for that. Some people are doing it.
Mega Wolf was doing it.
Yes, that's right. Hopefully a lot of wrestlers stay away from that. There's no bueno. Shayna Baszler has announced for her post-WWE indie match. MLW released former WWE producer David Sahadi. They announced they're partnering with Danny McBride for a November show. I don't know if he's appeared on a show yet or just he's been on camera or his tequila brand or something like that. So, the company also announced a match for the vacant middleweight title, and they rescheduled a November show to Chicago from Chicago to Charleston, South Carolina, where Leah learned that's because they're moving their headquarters to Charleston, South Carolina, which really was Gabe or Court Bauer wanting to move to Charleston, South Carolina, and saying, this is where this is going to be run from here on out. Olympic gold medalist, former WWE talent Gable Stevenson, set to make his MMA debut. Josh Barnett held the 14th edition of Bloodsport. Natalya took on Masha Slamovich. Nick Khan was in attendance during this as well. Mystery Wrestling, I believe this is the promotion run by Evil Uno, broke the record for the longest match during a charity fundraiser. Tom Lawler had hip replacement surgery, and Indie Promotion raised $132,000 for the Canadian Cancer Society. A deputy sheriff recounted a story about saving Scott Steiner's life in 2020. Brandi Rhodes officially opened a new children's boutique. Eric Bischoff said Real American Freestyle is playing a live weekly TV series. Nick Gage, Karrion Kross, and Scarlett made their surprise returns and so on at GCW Homecoming. CMLL crowned their 2025 Men's International Grand Prix winner, that being Mystico. Brian Knobbs was set to face potential foot amputation. Diamond Dallas Page underwent a heart procedure, provided a positive update after that. And then former WWE manager Abraham Washington, his girlfriend or his fiance, I believe, or maybe his wife, revealed on Facebook that He was recovering from a life-threatening medical emergency. Thoughts about any and all of that?
Man, well, I mean, I guess like the most prominent, aside from definitely glad to hear about people on the up and up from the health issues. Probably Mercedes Moné, because that she just lost the Aldridge Women's World Television title to Red Velvet. Mm-hmm. So it looks like we're on this this Mercedes.
Maybe
I guess maybe like the other
descent.
Side. Yeah, the descent, the other side of this story that she's on.
You know what's random is she, and sorry to interrupt, I brought this up early in the series, when she lost the New Japan Women's Strong title to Izumi, just randomly, and then she went this long string of winning all these other titles. It's so random that if this leads to the downfall, it makes sense. But of all the titles, I'm just surprised that that was the one that she lost along the way. You'd think New Japan would kind of want her in the mix, but I guess not. I don't know, it's weird.
What's the name? So New Japan, they haven't run a show since. When was the last time? Because I know they got the Trenton, New Jersey show, but they're not even calling that. Are they even calling that Strong
US? Oh, the Strong. Yeah, they haven't really had much of a, it feels like a U.S. present
this second presence at all.
In this second half of the year. The early half, they did the like Windy City Riot and some
and
of those
they had
things.
A resurgence and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, since then, yeah, it seems like as we're starting to go through this, it's less and less. Yeah.
Yeah, but I know they got the show in February. They got the New Beginning show in February, but they're not even branding that as Strong. Like they're just calling that just New Japan coming to USA again. So I mean, but that, I mean, the title is it's an I think Saya Kamatani has the NJPW Strong Women's Championship right now. She's gonna be defending that. She's gonna be defending it against Suri at Wrestle Kingdom, and yeah, she's gonna be defending that belt at Wrestle Kingdom. It's a double title match at I think I don't know if it's, I can't remember if it's a double title match or it's just a World of Stardom Championship match at Dream Queendom. But regardless, she's gonna be defending that Strong Women's title against Suri at Wrestle Kingdom. So, but yeah, it's the Mercedes thing is interesting, man. Like I think Mercedes, phenomenal wrestler, obviously. So it's gonna be like it was very interesting to see that reaction to Red Velvet. Like that thing was like I seen like one person tweet had like damn near like 20,000 likes about like Mercedes losing this title to Red Velvet. And I'm like, wow. God damn! Like people was like eager to see her first, like they was like wanted to see her lose her first belt. But I think that's also I guess you could say it's a nod and her cap about like you know people being invested in some shape or form about her doing this belt collector thing and, you know, wanting to see, some people want to see her on the up and up, some people want to see her on the downtick. But I think that ultimately, you know, when she does have to make the rounds and lose all these belts because she's going to go to Scotland and she's going to go to Discovery Wrestling and Refro and like she's going to, Mercedes got a lot of dates to make. But I think it'll all circle back to the conclusion of it being like the finale of it, her losing the TNT, TBS championship. But I think that when she hits that downfall, then that's when we'll see her ascension to the AEW Women's World Championship. So, like, when I'm thinking about the TBS Championship, first person that comes to my mind is Willow Nightingale. Like, I think that's, like, a perfect person to take that belt off of Mercedes. And then, you know, I think that's when we'll eventually see her become AEW Women's World Champion. Looking at this other stuff, definitely happy to hear about Gresham. I saw he's coming back for a couple of shows in February, so I'm happy for him. I'm glad he, you know, he's feeling much better. That's some scary stuff right there. Yeah, and we got some other stuff as well. You know, just the health stuff. I'm glad to see all these people, you know, on the other opposite side of all this health stuff. Like I wanted to ask you before we wrap it up.
Yeah,
thanks for bringing me on again, man. So I love doing these. It's always fun doing all this like research and stuff like that. Same I get here, yeah. Get excited doing this, but we like I wanted to ask you about like so 2026, like I was thinking about like potential like prospects for AEW, and I'm like two people that immediately came to mind is just because the news that happened last week, Dakota Kai facing Chris Statlander at the E show, and I'm like that I would be very there's a part of me that thinks that eyes are going to be on that match. I'm talking about like AEW eyes in terms of like okay like could that be a thing, sure. Or maybe she's there before that happens. And also, I can see like Jake something going to AEW in 2026. Like, cause only reason why I thought that is because he's facing Bandido at the Warrior Wrestling Show in early January. And I was like, I can kind of see that being like sort of like a I guess like a parlay into Jake something signing with AEW. I know his TNA contract. Fightful reported his TNA contract is expiring at the end of the year. And the Rascals are too. The Rascals will be free, but I think they're gonna end up staying with TNA, especially with the new TV deal. But I could see Jake something going to AEW. But I wanted to simply ask you about those two. Like, did you see like a Dakota Kai and a Jake something in AEW, or you don't really?
Well, I mean, we're just talking about where does Hikaru Shida fit in AEW, right? I mean, I think you get that pop, right? But I think where she fit, right? I mean, they just have so many people already, and this is kind
You're
of the
right,
thing,
though.
you know? I mean, that's hard. It's like, Athena should be on the main roster.
Exactly.
You know,
Exactly.
there's only so many hours, and this is why Ring of Honor should be a lot more loaded than it is. But I think it's just, a time commitment and all that. But yeah, I think, you could, again, where she fit. And I think with Jake something, it's the same thing. You know, I mean, you look at some of these wrestlers, like in the Don Callis family, for example,
I was just about to
you
say
know, like
that.
El Clone, like I'll say he made an appearance the other day in a run-in, and it's like, oh yeah, he hasn't done anything at all. It's like, do they really have to wait for Hologram to come back? But I mean, they've had so many guys come back from injury that are kind of getting going again. I mean, you could. He's a entertaining wrestler. I just don't see where he fits in the mix. So it's always possible, but to me, like, you have to have enough to do for your existing talent, and they really hold on to people. He holds on to people to his benefit until their contracts are done. If he's not going to bring them back, I think unless there's a reason for it. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how Wardlow could come back at some point. You know, that's someone that you could, you know, it's a, there's just so many people that are hurt, and they just have a lot of talent and loaded roster. I think it's tough when you don't have so many promotions that can afford people. I mean, he could do an MLW thing for sure. But
What's
yeah,
that?
if they signed him for, you know, primarily the Ring of Honor brand, and to come in, and again, that'd be somewhere you could have him challenge for a world title, and do, there's things you could do, but I don't, top of my mind, I just don't really see either of those women or either of those talents coming in, rather.
Like a necessity for him. Like there's no like this it's not an urgent thing to bring him
No,
in.
I think at this point your urgency comes when, like, you know, say like a Zack Sabre Jr.'s contract comes up, or you see an asset, you look at these WWE releases and you're just like, huh. Or you know, like the Ricochet types, right? Where there's clearly talent there, and he wants an opportunity, and you're like, there's something there, and he's, I think he is hugely, you know, paid off for
Man,
them,
you talk
which is
about
great.
Ricochet.
He's had
Like
a great year, a great year.
I was throwing that praise at Dominic. Man, R Ricochet, I was not expecting Ricochet to fall into the role that he has like carved out for him. So I genuinely was not expecting that. Like I thought he was gonna come in, and, he was gonna be, have some great matches, and then he'll eventually, fade off at some point. Like that's kind of what I was expecting. And then he flipped the switch, man. And Ricochet, he rolling. Like much respect to him.
Yeah, and that's the thing that makes it tough when you have people from New Japan coming in, a lot of CMLL people coming in. You just don't have those spots. And so yeah, I think one of the things I've noticed through the series is they have not brought in as many people as they have in the past. And I think it's a big change. You don't have Rampage anymore, so that's one less hour. You know, 50 some hours a year where you can put people on. And I think they're gonna go, I think they're always gonna be in the mix now for big ticket items. I think some of the ones are like, yeah, that'd be fine. I think they have enough, I have so many people now, they don't want to do that. That'd be my guess. Unless they really think they can make an impact. But we'll see. We'll see.
I agree.
Let's see. One other note before I forget. The Stardom 5-star Grand Prix winner was Momo Watanabe. Way, go way back to Japan. Want to get that on the record. But yeah, this has been a fun, our yearly 2-hour conversation, which is great. It always feels like 10 minutes to me, which
Appreciate
is
that,
great.
man.
And yeah, let people know where they can find you on social, and obviously over at Fightful doing work almost every day, right? You
Yeah,
know, different
man.
news articles and things like that. Floor is yours.
Appreciate you, Josh. First of all, man, appreciate you having me on this. This is always
Always.
a fun time. I always enjoy I enjoy the most like veering off in like random topics. That's like one of
That's
the
why we
funny
always go 2 hours, right? It's good.
that's one of the funnest things about it. It's like just going off on the random tangents. But yeah, definitely always appreciate you having me on, man. It's always a good time to talk to you. Definitely most definitely good to see you too, man. Hope you and the family doing good. What else? I got my you follow me on Twitter, and my Instagram at 80 Thompson underscore underscore. Check out my written work at FIFO. I got like my little link tree in the bio. You can see all my past work from post wrestling, from even from my early days, man, at U Wrestling News and Lords of Pain. Check out some of that old stuff, some of my old early work from like 2017. I got all that stuff in my bio if you ever wanted to got bored and wanted to see that. And yeah, man, that's about it. Josh, appreciate you having me on, my guy.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. And yeah, that does it for the month of August. We talked about a lot from Cody Rhodes, John Cena. We talked about Forbidden Door and everything in between. A lot of stuff happens. This is a pretty busy month. I'm glad you were here hanging with me for it. Andrew Thompson, thanks so much.